Well, hello, modern mystics, and happy December, and welcome to our December bonus coaching call. We're going to be doing our official live coaching call for this month at the end of the month, but I wanted to be able to give you guys this special gift, this special Christmas treat, to provide you with this extra coaching call as a way of supporting you through through the time that we're rolling into as we come into my favorite time of year, mystically speaking, winter solstice and Christmas. And I hope that wherever you are in the world, especially my friends in California, that you're safe and sound, and the season of fire that is initiating us all here is that regardless of where you are, what the circumstances are in your world, that you are staying safe and sound and in a position of peace and power, regardless of whatever is going on around you. And to those of you, those members who are living elsewhere in the world, wherever you are, I hope that your mystical practice is serving you well, and that your tools of peace and power are really starting to take root and take shape and take effect in your life in meaningful ways. You know, this mystical process that we've all agreed to embark on, it is a growing, it is an unfolding, it is a constant and continual thing of renewal. It is a living, alive, conscious process that, you know, it never ends, which is part of its beauty. It is constantly renewing itself. It is constantly being reborn as we settle into greater levels of consciousness and awareness and light. And so I want you to be able to embrace how the light continually renews within you on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis, that it is a living intelligence that is never, ever stagnant and will be different and new for you every moment and every second of the day. And for wherever you find yourself at this stage as we roll into solstice, to really appreciate how far you've come, to look forward to the idea of how far we have to go, that's a part of the spiritual adventure, that we don't look at the journey that we're on as any sort of obligation or duty, but rather it becomes a great privilege and a great honor and a great gift that we get to embrace and celebrate, not only at this time of year, but every day of the year and every moment that we get to celebrate where we're at. Regardless of whether it's a good day and we're feeling awesome and we're in the flow, or the day might be a little bit more challenging, that we can use the tools of our mystical practice to ground us and center us and put us in a position point of peace and power, and realize that at every moment of the day, we are doing our work. We are doing the process. Some days we might feel like we've got a little more mastery of it, and we feel like we've got a little bit more control. And other days we really have to exercise our muscles and use our tools and remember our awarenesses. So I just want to say to you, as a part of the Christmas or the Christmas blessing, that I am truly appreciative and grateful for all of you who have been a part of membership for so long, and for our new members who have joined us. You are really a great gift to me. It is through you that this work emerges. It is because of your call and your request and your interest and your inquiry and your desires that the work finds a sort of a channel through me to be able to present these teachings to you. So without you, as gifts of you in my life, this work wouldn't be possible. So I just wanted to say thank you all so much, let you know how much I appreciate you as being gifts in my own life, to not only serve me as a resource and a receptacle for the learnings to go into, but you also inspire me to learn and grow and become a better teacher, and to be sure that I'm walking my talk in every moment, that I'm not just telling you what to do, but I'm actually living the work itself. So thank you for being such lovely gifts in my own life. And so with that, the purpose of today's bonus call, as we roll into winter solstice, and I know that we've got mystic members who live in the southern hemisphere, so for you guys, we're rolling into summer solstice, but I want you to be able to consider the time of year as it relates to Christmas as sort of the key thing that we have in common. that while we're using solstice, whether it's winter or summer solstice, as the catalyst of energy, what we're really going to focus on here is the idea of the changing of light and the Christmas story as it relates to the story of light and the birth of the divine nature within us all, that we all possess, the birth of the divine Christed light within us is really what we're going to focus on today. And for the purpose of sort of being able to keep it in time frame, why winter solstice is so important for us is that in the winter solstice in the northern hemisphere, it indicates the dying of the light. On the winter solstice, December 21st is the shortest day of the year in the northern hemisphere. There is the least amount of light. It is the day in the northern hemisphere when the sun finally dies after it has spent the previous 361 days traveling around the world and going through its various stages. And on solstice, the light dies. And then if we're talking geographically speaking, what happens is it stays below the horizon. The sun stays below the horizon based on the tilt of the earth and the spin of the axis. The sun stays below the horizon for 3 days. And then after the end of the 3 days, the sun returns. The divine light returns, and that is Christmas Day. So mystically speaking, we understand that the sun in our 3D reality represents divine nature, remembering that in our mystical understanding that behind everything we see or experience physically, that there is a spiritual energy or a consciousness that exists at the root of that. And the same thing applies for us in relationship to the sun. The sun in our divine mystical knowledge and training is the physical representation of source energy, the physical representation of the consciousness of divine intelligence, the physical representation of God, if you will. And literally, you look at the sun, nothing could exist on this planet without it. The heat from the sun, the electromagnetics from the sun, the particles, the electrons, the protons, the neutrons, the bosons, the magnetic current, the positive and electrical physical charges that come off from the sun are all essential to life existing here. So the sun is a physical representation of God force in our reality. So anytime we talk about the seasons of the sun and the story of light as it relates to our mystical practice, what we're doing, although we're using the sun as a representative, what we're really talking about is consciousness. The sun is a representation of that divine consciousness in our 3D reality. And so it's important to understand as mystics why we pay so much attention to the sun. We're not worshiping the sun, contrary to what a lot of people will say, is that, that people who are mystics or esotericists or work alchemically, they're worshiping the sun and so they're worshiping a false god. And that's not it at all. We understand that the physical representation of the sun is the physical manifestation of source energy in and of itself in our environment here. And so when we're talking about winter solstice, when we're talking about Christmas and the birth of the divine Christed nature, we're telling a story of light. And if you remember in some of our teachings a while back when we talked about the idea of the Big Bang, which is what scientists call the Big Bang, is how life started, that when the God force, when source energy decided to manifest itself into physical stuff, it had to break itself into two. The all had to become the all and the nothing and create the void, an empty space in which it could project itself. And when it did that, it created light, information, what scientists would call photons, electrons, the information that is carried in light. And that first light contains all of the information, all of the intelligence, all of the wisdom, all of the potential, all of the growth, past, present, and future, that source energy contains in and of itself. And that first expression of light that came from source energy itself was known as the Christ, the Christed light, the first light. So when we hear the story of the birth of the Christ, where it says God sent his only begotten son, what that means, mystically speaking, is that God sent his only begotten son, the only one. Well, there is only one light. There is only one divine intelligence. And when it becomes physicalized and manifests itself as light, that is the Christ. That is the divine intelligence, the first physicalization, if you will, of source energy. And so when we're talking about the equation of light, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the birth of the Christ. And that Christ light is available to all of us. And in the story of Jesus and all of his stories, his birth, his death, his passion, his teachings, all of that stuff is simply a story of the conversation, the journey, the process of the refining of that light, not only in Jesus's story, but how we can use that process in and of ourselves in our own journey. So if you guys are just going to hang on for just half a second here, my puppy dog is getting into a bit of trouble here and I just need to wrangle her. So just hold on for just a second. Sorry about that, guys. I don't know if any of you, I mean, I know for those of you who have children that it's only when you get on the phone or when you get in the tub or when you go to meditate that your children suddenly need something from you. And I don't have children, but Lily, my dog, as many of you guys know, she is my fur baby, and it seems it never fails. The moment I get on a call, the moment I get on the phone, she suddenly decides that she wants to be cheeky. She wants to be a brat. So she just, the second I got on the call with you, she decided it was the best time of day to go in and start to pull plastic tops out of the little storage bin that I've got sitting in my kitchen. So, the joys of children. So I apologize for that. So we're talking about this idea of the Christed light. And so the story of Christmas, the story of Jesus, the story of the divine birth of the Christmas light, how we take advantage of that time, understanding the equation that as the light dies and then goes, disappears into the underworld for 3 days and then is born again, that's a time for us as mystics to renew our relationship with that light within ourselves, to celebrate the fact that we are constantly being reinvigorated, not just at Christmas, but at every day of the year, and to be able to take advantage of that light. And, you know, it kind of strikes me a little bit as odd. Well, maybe not odd, but, you know, most times at Christmas, you know, we're so busy. There's parties and gifts and you know, we've got to travel to see family, and there's, you know, dinners that you've got to plan, and you've got to shop, and there's all this busyness that occurs around Christmas that is actually the antithesis to the energy of the time, which is why I don't know if you've ever noticed that when Christmas is over, most people are burned out. It's because they're operating against the very nature of that time. And Christmas, around Christmas time, December in particular, through solstice and into the early days of January, is really a time of stillness, particularly because in the Northern Hemisphere, we have less and less light, with which to work. And in the winter is when nature knows that it's time to chill, it's time to relax, it's time to rest, it's time to regroup, it's time to reboot. So what I want to be able to say to you guys as mystics over the course of the holiday, by all means, have fun, do what you want to do and need to do with your family, celebrate, be grateful, take the time to party and all of that other stuff. But I want you to be really, really sure that you take time over the next 3 weeks to really be still, to take some time on your own. If you have family, that's fine. Do what you need to do with family, but make it clear to them to say, look, I'm going to take a day over the course of the holidays, and I'm going to go do something for myself, by myself, on my own, quiet time, just to be still. And I understand that, you know, for those of you guys with families and kids and all of that other stuff, that might be challenging, but this becomes a part of the discipline of the mystical practice, where that self-care and that those individual rituals for oneself become a real priority. It's not selfishness, it's self-care. And so I want to be really sure that you guys take some time through the course of the holiday. If you can't get a whole day, then get a half a day. You know, your family and your kids will do okay without you for a while. If you go and do something for yourself, you'll have more energy to engage with them when you return than you would if you'd stayed and suffered through it. So I want you to be really sure that you take that time. And I want you to notice how this time of year does call us to be still. It calls us to be quiet. It calls us to move slowly. It calls us to do less activity. But again, you know, our society is conditioned that at this time of the year, we should be busier than ever, which is literally like swimming upstream energetically. So I want you to be really cognizant and aware of what the energetic time of the year as it relates to light and sun is telling us to do. So the Christmas story of light is that. And Jesus, as the sort of the great mystical teacher, his story represents this rebirth of light for us as mystics. Not as our savior, but as our representative. And you know, Jesus, the great mystic, has always said, all these things I do, you shall do, and even greater things. He was telling us mystically that his understanding of light and his understanding of consciousness and his understanding of his relationship to source energy in his time, the things that if we have that same understanding of our relationship with source energy and our ability to partner with it and engage with it and shape it and move it, given our time and the things that we're capable of here with technology and new science and deeper awarenesses of medicine and consciousness, that we'll be able to do even greater things with his tools of understanding that even he could do. And so he stands as a representative. So we take this time at Christmas to really settle into the story of light. And as it becomes less and less prominent, we settle down into that rhythm. And then as it is reborn after Christmas, we claim that light as our own for ourselves. And so that moving into the new year, we can use that light in a powerful way to support our mystical work, to encourage our mystical growth, to deepen our esoteric awareness, to expand our enlightenment and our evolution. And so the story of the solstice is that the light dies on the 21st. It exists, it lays below the horizon for 3 days, which is where the light goes to die. And then it is reborn on Christmas. So that is the mystical story of the light. And then as it relates to the gift of the regular story, the rest of the story of Jesus as it relates to our mystical practices, we're going to talk about the gifts of the Magi. And the three wise men who come to visit Jesus and Mary and Joseph in the manger. They travel from the east, from far away in the east. They follow a star and they bring the Christ child, the new light. They bring the new light, gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Well, I want you to be very deeply aware of the fact that all of the elements in that story are esoteric, mystical clues to the development of our own Christed light, of the birth of our own divine nature. So, and that each of those elements in the story represent the elements of creation itself. They represent the elements of fire, water, air, and earth. They represent the levels of the alchemical process. They represent the levels of mind. They represent the animal kingdom, the mineral kingdom, the human kingdom, and the vegetable kingdom. So there's a very powerful, esoteric, mystical story being told there within the story of the three wise men coming to meet the divine Christed light on the day of its birth. And so the Magi, the three wise men, the gifts of the Magi. Now, Magi means magician or means initiate. In our common vernacular, a Magi would represent a shaman or a priest who is highly trained in mystical practice. And so the three Magi represent the three initiates who were well-versed in mystical practice, who were well-versed in the story of cosmic intelligence, who were well-versed in the understanding of the powers of herbs and minerals, being gold and frankincense and myrrh in particular. And they came from the East. Now, the fact that they came from the East is no accident. The East is where the sun rises, right? Is the birthplace of the sun. These Magi came from the place of consciousness of the understanding of the wisdom of the sun. And so anytime we hear in any kind of mystical practice, whether it's Christianity or Buddhism or Kabbalah or any other mystical practice, the Vedas, anytime the East is mentioned, what they're talking about there is the place of the sun. It's talking about the place of divine consciousness. Whenever it is talking about divine origin, it is talking about divine intelligence. Whenever we do our ritual or our ceremony, we're always best served. We can do it in any place we want, but anytime we're talking about high mystical ceremony, we face the East. We face the house of the sun. We face the divine nature. We face where the God force first expresses itself on our planet. And so the Magi were three initiates, three highly trained priests who came from the East. So they had a powerful understanding of divine consciousness. This is the symbolism of their story. They traveled across the desert on beasts of burden. They came on camel back from far, far away. They met everybody in the manger. The manger is a symbol of simplicity, of earth, of nature. They were surrounded by animals. And they brought gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And so what that story represents there, that little segment of the story represents the three wise men partnering with all of the elements of nature, the animals representing the animal kingdom, the minerals that they brought, gold representing the mineral kingdom. Frankincense and myrrh are the herbs that represent the vegetable kingdom. And then dealing with the human beings representing the human kingdom. So all of the kingdoms, mineral, vegetable, animal, and human, all are represented in this divine story of light, and that all of those kingdoms, animal, vegetable, mineral, and human, are different representations at different levels of this divine consciousness. And so in the gift, in the story of Jesus, all kingdoms are represented. And what the three wise men also represent in the story of the number three. The number three is the symbolic symbol of the number of, represents spirit. Three in the number three in our mystical equation represents spirit. The number four in our mystical equation represents matter. So three and four when you multiply 3 times 4, when you combine those two numbers, you get 12. 12 signs of the zodiac, 12 apostles of Jesus, 12 tribes of Israel. 12 is represented constantly and continuously in all sorts of mystical scripture. So the number 3, as it relates to the Magi, represents spirit. The number three also represents the 3 levels of mind that we use in our mystical practice. Our conscious mind, which is our ability to intend, our ability to choose, our ability to direct, our ability to commit. That's the conscious mind. The subconscious mind, which is the feminine aspect. So the conscious mind is masculine. The subconscious mind is feminine. The subconscious mind is our ability to intuit, our ability to create, our ability to have empathy, our ability to shape outcomes. That's the subconscious mind. And then our superconscious mind is the union of those 2 levels of mind, the masculine and feminine, the divine God mind within each of us. So the 3 Magi represents those 3 levels of mind within us. The conscious, willful mind that has the ability to choose, the subconscious creative mind that has the ability to create, and the divine universal mind that has the ability to possess, that holds every outcome possible, every potential past, present, or future. And then the third thing that the gifts that the Magi represent are the 3 levels of alchemy, the 3 levels of transformation that we embark on as we move from our limitations of physical self and into the limitlessness of our Christed nature. So when the Christed light is born within us and reborn within us, in order for us to step into that true potential, we have to go through the processes of alchemy, the process of turning our spiritual lead into spiritual gold, right? Gold is the definition of true divine perfection, where all limitations have been removed and purified and transmuted and transformed so that our authentic divine intelligence can move through us in order for us to move from the limits of self and into the limitlessness of soul and source energy. Processes of alchemy have to be taken. And this is entirely what we're doing in our mystical processes, isn't it? We're breaking apart all the constructs of self that keep us limited, that kink our energetic hose, that keep us blocked, and we're stepping into greater realms of clarity and purpose and creativity and power and enlightenment and balance and love and grace and all of those things that are aligned with divine energy. And so the gifts, the Magi represent these 3 levels of alchemy. And oftentimes, if an image of the 3 Magi is created by somebody who is mystically trained, and I know that many of you purchased the Gifts of the Magi box that I put together to support you through this time. And if you didn't purchase the box, that's fine. All of these awarenesses will still support you at this time of year. But anytime an image of the 3 wise men is presented by somebody who is mystically trained, who understands alchemy, who understands the esoteric story, that each of the Magi will be dressed in the colors of white, black, and red. And as you notice on the Gifts of the Magi box, if you purchased it, so it stands with the Magi presented on my box, that they are dressed in the colors of black, white, and red. And the candles included in the box are also symbolized by the colors of black, white, and red. And interestingly enough, in the ancient times, when the pyramids of Egypt were first built, and there are still some small remnants of it today, there are 3 pyramids of Egypt. And when they were first built, it was believed that they too were colored black, white, and red. And so that each of the pyramids, there's 2 smaller pyramids and then the large pyramid at Giza, that when they were first initially built, they were covered with stone of black, white, and red. And so that each of those pyramids, when the high initiates would do their initiatory work, when they were doing their first stages of alchemy, they would work in the black pyramid. So when they were doing their middle stages, they would go to the White Pyramid. And when they were doing their final divine stages, they would go to the main pyramid, which was colored red. And so the wise men, who represent the colors black, white, and red, represent the stages of alchemy. The first stage of black is known in alchemical processes as negredo, or the blackening. It is when something is burned and desiccated and broken apart. And, you know, just think of the idea that when you are doing any sort of alchemical processes and you're working with herbs or minerals, the first thing you do is you burn those things. You bring them to fire. You bring divine light. You bring fire to them to start to blacken them. And so when we are doing any of our initiatory work, the blackening, the negredo, the dissolution, the dissolving of ourself, of our human nature, is what happens first. And every single person that I've ever coached or trained, and every mystic on this call, and every mystic in membership, you know that over the course of your life, you have gone through this stage of blackening, where your life seems to be completely falling apart, or it's just, you don't know who you are anymore, and the things that used to work for you don't work anymore, and the things that you love, you don't love anymore, and the things that used to inspire you, you feel like the wheels have come off. You feel like you're, you know, you don't know your head from a hole in the ground. Your emotions are all over the place. You're like, what the heck is going on? Am I losing my mind? This is negredo. This is the first stage of alchemy, which is essential to being reborn. This is the fire that devours the bird that will ultimately become the phoenix and reduces it to ash. Ash is the second part of the alchemical process, the whitening. So the second color that the three wise men represent is the color white, which in our alchemical processes is known as albedo, which is the whitening. So just think of the idea that anytime you burn something in the fire, if you let it sit long enough, eventually it will turn from black into ash, into white, into the whitening. And this whitening stage is where we start to purify, where we start to balance, where we start to really realize all of the things that are essential in our nature. This is where we've willingly, or maybe not so willingly, let go of all of the stuff that has been blackened away in the first process that represents self. And we're stepping into the whitening, which is the purification, which represents soul. So the first magi represents the blackening, the negredo, where all of the limits of self are burned away, which is really probably one of the most challenging aspects and stages of our alchemical processes. And the second one in the white phase represents the whitening, the purifying, the release of what is essential, the release of what is pure, the release of what is real, the bringing into awareness of what is authentic and true about ourselves. We start to identify more with those aspects of our nature and our being. And then the third magi in his color, in his red robes, represents the final stage, which is known as the reddening or the rubedo, which literally represents the birth, the rebirth of the light. It represents our divine nature. It represents the release or the birth of the Christed light within us, the total and complete purification of our being and our awareness. This reddening is what we could attribute the phoenix rising out of the ashes, that rises symbolically out of the flames to emerge as this being of power and clarity and beauty and grace. And so realize that as we're walking the mystical path, that we go through all of these stages, and sometimes we'll be at, you know, we'll be at different levels at different parts of our lives. Maybe our relationships are in the middle of the blackening stages and our spiritual practice is more in the white stage. But realize that when we do this mystical work and we walk the path as mystical initiates, we agree to this process. And so if you find yourself, and I know that with a lot of the people that I coach one-on-one who do this work, they'll say to me, you know, they'll be in the middle of the blackening stage of their work, and they'll be convinced that they're losing their mind, or they'll be convinced that, you know, none of our coaching is working because, you know, they're not able to vibrate high. They're not able to, you know, move forward because they're being dismantled. And that can be a really scary place to be. And that really is where we are right now on the planet. There's a massive dismantling occurring. All of the stuff that is false, all of the stuff that is inauthentic, all of the stuff that is not in integrity, all of the stuff that is structured from the limits of falseness and conditioning are being brought to the surface in a very powerful, profound, sometimes grotesque way for us to be able to look at them and for them to be burned away. You know, the entire planet this year has, and actually over the last 2 years, has really faced an initiation. Initiation by fire, for sure, here in California. Initiation by water, where there have been where there's been flooding and you know, inundation of rain and things like that. Initiation by air, where there's been hurricanes or big storms, where, you know, there's been a lot of damage that has washed stuff away. And initiation by earth, where we've had earthquakes. And I want you to look at those ideas of earth, air, fire, and water operating as initiatory tools, that what those things do, what those elements do within our lives, both individually and collectively, is they wash away what is inessential, or they burn away what is inessential, or they blow away what is inessential, or they crumble what is inessential. Now, it's not to say that we don't need our homes and our things. Those are certainly lovely things to have. But what these elements reveal for us is, as we go through these initiatory processes, particularly through the blackening stage, is that the blackening purifies us to reveal ultimately what is true. And so whether we've gotten stuff blown away or burned away or washed away or earthquaked away, that regardless of what happens in the physical world, what we are left with and how we exercise our character and how we stand strong when it seems like everything is being dismantled determines our outcome. And so each of the three wise men represent these stages. And they say, all right, if you're going to be a high initiate, like Jesus ultimately became, then these are the stages that you're going to have to go through to be able to break apart the constructs of limitation so that the true divine light and all of the things that are contained within that can shine brightly. You know, here in Southern California, where wildfires have decimated hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres, and you know, several of my friends lost their homes in some of the fires, which is certainly devastating. But what those fires are doing, in, as it relates to nature, is it's clearing away all of the old stuff that is no longer essential, the old brush that is dead and doesn't work and doesn't function and doesn't support life. It's burning those things away. And it's activating new seeds, and it's breaking open new pods, and it's clearing away clear ground, and it's turning all of that old stuff that's no longer valid. It's turning it into ash, which then becomes fertilizer for the new growth to emerge. Now, the process certainly is scary, and it's challenging, and in some cases, it's deadly. But at its root, it is wise. It is a wise, intelligent, powerfully transformative process. And so that's what the Magi, the three wise men of this story, represent for us as mystics, to remind us each year, as these three wise men show up, to say, okay, let's check in with ourselves. Let's see where we've gone through a blackening, where we've burned stuff away that is inessential. Let's see and how we've if we've been able to stay sane, if you will, and conscious in that process. Let's check in and see how much blackening we've done this year. And then let's check in and see, okay, how much purification have I done this year? Where has stuff been refined and turned into ash? Where have I let go of the things that aren't true for me? My limitation, my fear, my lack, my victimization, my pettiness, whatever that is. Where have I purified that? And where am I standing stronger and clearer and more powerful? And Where am I noticing that I'm stepping into greater levels of redness, of rubedo? And being able to use this time of year to check in at those each of those stages in our lives and say, yeah, okay, I see that the majority of this year was spent in the blackening. Okay, I'm good with that. I understand the processes here. I'm not going to freak out. Or I understand, oh, okay, yeah, I've settled nicely into the whitening. Okay, I'm good with the level of stillness and potential that that offers for me. Okay, and then you can check in and say, oh, I've noticed moments. They might have been short and few and far and in between, but I've noticed moments when I've been in that reddening, where I felt the phoenix rising out of the ashes, where I felt that divine nature emerging through me. Oh my gosh, yeah, okay. I can see where all three of these elements have been active within me. And because they're all active within me, then I know I'm good. I know I'm on the right path. I know my spiritual practice is serving me, even though sometimes it feels wildly uncomfortable. I know I'm okay. And I know I've got the support. So that is what the three wise men represent. And so we're served not only at Christmas, but throughout the course of the year to be able to check in with those three wise men within ourselves, those three initiates, and just be like, huh, all right. This is where I'm at on this day. And sometimes you'll go back and burn off more stuff that needs to be revisited and further purified. That doesn't become something that we feel punished by. It's just a part of the process, right? It builds our character, and it builds our courage, and it builds our commitment, and which ultimately builds our consciousness, right? As we become more and more refined, more and more levels and higher degrees of light, Christed consciousness, source energy can move through us as us. Again, using the analogy of a raw stone of diamond, as it is purified, as it is refined, as it goes through its alchemical processes of removing the stuff that is no longer essential, more and more light is able to be moved through that. And so that's what we're doing here. And so that's what the story of the three magi tell us. All right. So there are, you know, so maybe some ahas and epiphany moments here. So that's what they represent. And then they brought gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Gold symbolizes the divine purity, the divine perfection. Gold is a metal of the sun. It represents divinity. It represents royalty. It represents perfection as it relates to our story of alchemy. Gold is our ultimate spiritual ideal, right? Converting our spiritual lead into spiritual gold. So the Magi brought a crucible of gold, a container made out of gold. I don't think that they brought gold, like as in gold coins. I believe that they brought a container, a vessel, a crucible to contain the other two herbs, frankincense and myrrh. So frankincense and myrrh are herbs that represent the vegetable kingdom. Gold is a mineral that represents the mineral kingdom. So there's two of the other levels of consciousness that are represented in our three-dimensional reality that are a part of this equation. Frankincense is an herb that is ruled by the sun. It is masculine in nature. Myrrh is an herb that is ruled by the moon, it is feminine in nature. And so, and when those two herbs are blended together and either burned, inhaled, rubbed on the skin, or ingested, they combine to form a very powerful combination of consciousness. So remember that plants, animals, minerals, vegetables, humans, they all have levels of consciousness. And so the three wise men brought frankincense and myrrh, powerful herbs that were burned together in the crucible of gold so that they could be used as a ceremonial offering to activate higher levels of consciousness. So when frankincense and myrrh are burned together, the masculine energies and the feminine energies combine in a divine union. They're burned together in the crucible of gold, and if they're inhaled, they activate higher levels of intuition, higher levels of engagement with source energy, higher levels of connection to the divine mind, etc. And that is the equation. When you combine masculine and feminine, as we understand and we know in our mystical equations, that that's when the divine nature becomes activated. We open a portal, a stargate, if you will, and that provides us with access to that divine intelligence. Now, again, if you ordered the gifts of the Magi box, there's a whole video that walks you through all of these processes. But for those of you who didn't, I just want to give you a little bit of a touch on why frankincense and myrrh were mystically important. Mystically important, that is why, because when they're combined and they're burned or they're ingested, they activate higher cognitive thinking. They stimulate order and balance. Because myrrh is an anti-inflammatory, it often influences the brain so that the brain function is more stable and ordered and balanced. Frankincense has the ability to also increase and amplify cognitive function. So in this case, mystically speaking, the frankincense and myrrh, as they were burned, were standing as ceremonial incenses to open the door to mystical awareness. Practically speaking, why they would have brought frankincense and myrrh to a childbirth scene is that frankincense is a very powerful antiseptic, antibiotic, anti-inflammatory. So it would have been offered to the baby Jesus to be used on his umbilical cord. It would have been offered to Mary to keep her free from, you know, bacteria or infections and things like that. And the myrrh operates also as an anti-inflammatory. So the myrrh would have been used as a balm that would have been spread on the baby Jesus to reduce swelling, to reduce bruising, to assist with just, you know, coming out of the birth process very gracefully. So these herbs were very powerful in their antibiotic, antimicrobial, anti-swelling, healing properties. And so they were used in the story of the Magi in a number of ways. But and throughout history, the ancient Egyptian priests, high priests, through all of their ceremony, would use a blend of frankincense and myrrh. The divine beauties, Cleopatra especially, was well known to have built the first beauty spa. And she used daily anointings of the essential oils of frankincense and myrrh to keep her skin beautiful and ageless. And so frankincense and myrrh has been used through millennium to not only accelerate divine consciousness, but to also heal the body, to keep the brain in tip-top function, to heal the skin, and to keep the body and the mind and the spirit healthy and balanced. So, and when those herbs of frankincense and myrrh are combined with gold, whether burned in a crucible of gold or blended with gold, then that gold is the impulse of the divine nature that sort of activates those two herbs and brings them to life. So understand that the story of the Magi was very important. There's a lot of symbolism there. There's a lot of hints and tools and little sort of, if you're paying attention mystically, alchemically, you catch the hints. You go, oh, I understand what's working here. It's a far more involved story than just the babe in the manger and three guys from the east showing up on a candle on camels carrying stuff that we've never heard of. There's a lot of information carried in this story. And then the other part of the story that I want to talk about is the story of the Archangel Gabriel when he visits the Virgin Mary to tell her that she should expect this divine birth, this divine wisdom to emerge from her, that she is going to be the mother of God. Well, so again, symbolically speaking, there's a lot of esoteric symbolism that's going on here. The Virgin Mary represents the divine feminine, the material womb. Now, remember, in our mystical practices, spirit, the masculine spirit, is invisible. It's spiritual. It's unseen. The divine feminine is physical, right? The divine masculine is positively electrically charged, and it is spirit. It's unseen. The divine feminine is physical, it is material in nature, and it is negatively electrically charged. And Gabriel stands as the messenger. The Archangel Gabriel stands as the messenger that sort of sets up the blind date, if you will, between divine masculine spirit and divine feminine matter. And Archangel Gabriel, if we're talking esoterically, he represents the symbol, the element of water. Archangel Gabriel represents the elemental symbol of water. And water is the element that exists in between the element of the creative element of fire, which is spirit, and earth, which is matter. And so Archangel Gabriel, who represents the element of water, essentially acts as the matchmaker between fire and earth. That in order for something to become materialized, it must first, in order for fire, which is the creative impulse of spirit, that which is non-physical, in order for it to become physical, it must descend. And water is the element that is used to cultivate that creative process. Fire becomes water, which then becomes air and earth. So Gabriel, spiritually and symbolically speaking, is the representation of the element of water. And that element of water says to the element of earth, you are perfect. You are a noble vessel. I am preparing you. I'm making way for you so that fire, the seed of spirit, the seed of Father, the seed of God, the impulse of the creative force itself can take root in your womb, your feminine womb, the womb of darkness. And so that the Christed light, divinity, can be made manifest in the physical world. And so that's how Gabriel, why he plays a part in this story, that he acts as the conduit, talking to Mary, essentially blessing the virgin earth, blessing the pure vessel to say, all right, you're good. I'm coming here to tell you that that spirit is going to be born in you, but it can only happen if I'm here, right? With the element of water is where spirit becomes manifested into earth, where the element of fire descends through water to become air and earth. So all of those elements are essential to creation, but after the light, after fire, water comes. And so that's why Gabriel, who came to Mary, the divine container, and said, greetings to you, who is highly favored. Essentially, what that is esoterically is it's the element of water saying to the element of earth, hi, guess what? You have the complete and total potential to carry the impulse of the and the spark of divine nature in you. And so brace yourself, kiddo, because here it comes. And so we carry that divine feminine nature within ourselves as well, that purified, untouched, unblemished nature of the feminine aspect in our soul that is never born, will never die, can never be destroyed, can never be tarnished, can never be impure. It is always standing there as a pure, potent, unblemished, perfect vessel that exists within us. And if we're paying attention and if we stay open and we do our purifying work, if we do our mystical work to do our alchemical processes of negredo and albedo and rubedo, the processes of black and white and red, that we purify our own nature, our own vessel, so that when the time is right, then that Christed nature can be born. We become vessels for that Christed light. And then it is born through us as us. And it starts to ooze out of us and shine out of us and express itself out of us as our creative nature. So the Christed babe, the baby Jesus, when we're creating, when we're painting, when we're writing, when we're sharing with others, when we're when we're shopping for our family, when we're cooking food, when we're doing our meditative work, and how that starts to represent itself becomes our Christed baby, really. You know, if you're writing from that that awareness of purification, the words that come out are words of the Christed light. If you're painting, then the paintings that emerge are paintings of the Christed light. If you're standing in line at the bank and you're just holding that energy, then that Christed light is coming out of you, right? And it becomes a byproduct of this interaction of fire and air using our vessel and our vehicle to birth this light, right? So realize that in this entire story from beginning to end, when Gabriel showed up and said, "Hey, Mary, you best expect that this is going to be the outcome," what that is that's the mystical story of the impulse of spirit using the element of water, Gabriel, to activate this birth of the Christed nature. So all of these things are essential to the process of creation. And in the story as well, you know, the star that they followed, that represents fire, water. Gabriel represents water. Air is represented by the incense that they burned, and earth is represented by the mangers. You know, there's also, if you look at the story, there's elemental stuff all scattered all over the place that if we're paying attention and we start to look at those divine stories, and not only just the story of the Christed one, but any of the divine stories that we read in any kind of scripture, whether it's Christian scripture or Vedic scripture or Jewish scripture, if you start to read those stories symbolically and you start to ask the questions, okay, what elements are being talked about here? What levels of consciousness are being talked about here? What aspects of masculine and feminine nature are being talked about here? And you start to read all of that scriptures from those higher levels of awareness, you start to see how any of those mystical scriptures aren't, if we read them literally, materially, then they tell one story. Sure, they're nice stories, but they don't offer us much information or wisdom. If we start to read them esoterically, we start to see the true beauty carried in all of them. That, you know, those books, regardless of who they were written by, ultimately at their root are divinely sourced. If you know how to read them, if a mystic, somebody who's mystically trained, reads those books, they will get a lot different information, way different information than somebody who's just reading it as a young child would, right? So this is the beauty of this story, and what I hope that this understanding of the story of the birth of Christ and the Christmas story, the story of light, the story of solstice, the story of the Magi, the story of Gabriel and the Virgin Mary, I hope with these clear understandings of these stories provide for you, as I walk you through these processes, is the ability for you to start to see things mystically. And so that not only are you seeing, you know, scripture and religious teachings mystically, but to also look in your own life and the things that you're experiencing to start to see those things mystically as well, and to look at the symbols in your own life and the stuff that's happening in your own life and be able to look at that and go, okay, all right, I've embarked on this spiritual adventure. I've committed to it hardcore, and there's no way I can turn back now. So what is my life showing me about what stage I might be at? And, you know, when you join Modern Mystics, one of the first videos that I showed you was a video of the Rio Olympics with a Katy Perry song called Rise. And I know some of you have difficulty accessing it based on where you are in the world. And if you do, I apologize for that. But you can find it on YouTube if you go to Katy Perry Rise Rio Olympics. And one of the most powerful words or streams of words in that video, and why I chose it as the lead-in to Modern Mystics, is because it says, one of the words it says, "I must stay conscious I must stay conscious through the fire and turbulence," essentially, is what she's saying in her words. "And I call on my angels," which means she calls on you. When we call on our higher self, when we call on our divine wisdom to help us stay conscious through the mat. No, the words are, I must stay conscious through the madness and chaos. Now, whether or not Katy Perry was aware of what she was talking about, she's talking about an alchemical process that as we start to break apart our limits of self, that there's going to be some madness and some chaos that emerge, and we have to stay conscious and understand the process. And then ultimately what happens is we rise. Yeah, I mean, I know Katy Perry came from a Christian background. I don't know if she knows, maybe she does, what the story she's telling there, or if those words were divinely inspired. Who knows? I mean, I don't know Katy Perry. But the messages in that song are very powerful and really relate to us mystically speaking. And then part of the words it says, too, that there's going to be days when it feels like the final nail has been driven into my coffin, because so much removal, so much blackening has occurred. But if I stay conscious through the madness and the chaos, I will rise. My roots go deep. I move beyond the archetype, she says in the song. And if I call on my angels to help me stay conscious through the madness and chaos, even when it feels like everything is lost, I will rise. And so that's what we're doing through this process. And that's what we're, you know, as we look at any kind of mystical teacher, whether it's Jesus or Buddha or Kuan Yin or Lao Tzu, they all had these experiences of transformation where they were born in human form and then they evolved into this divine nature. And so Christmas allows us to celebrate that spark within ourselves, the spark that lights the divine fire, the spark that amplifies our divine will. You know, the spark that lights a fire. I mean, again, just look at California. It just takes one or two. It just takes one spark, not even two. It takes one spark to cultivate massive change. And that Christed light at Christmas time is when we are being asked to really feed that spark and really understand its purpose in our world and in our life, and how it can be used to serve us as we move forward in the year to come. Right. So this is why I love this time of year, not because of all of the gift giving and the party and stuff. In fact, my December into early January is very, very quiet. I do a lot of inner retreat, a lot of, you know, and listen, I get it. I'm a single woman with no kids. So it's a very different story for me than it might be for people with, you know, lots of family and kids and all of that other stuff. But this is why I say you need to really make it an important part of December to support the energy of the time, to really take some time for inner self and inner reflection and take some time with your meditations and things like that to support the time of year. December for me is, I love this time of year because it really invites us to take the time to reflect on that Christed light and the story of this time and reflect on it mystically. And it was when I was a youngster, and this was long before I did any mystical training, but it reminds me that I know that I had a mystical streak in me from the very beginning, because I would go to church either at Christmas or Easter, and I would listen to the priests tell their stories, and I would get angry. I'd be like, that's not what this story means at all. And I would get in trouble because I went to Catholic school, and I would get in trouble with the nuns. I'd be like, that's not what this story means at all, and you're getting it wrong. And so I would get detention or I'd get punished. And so eventually over time I started to shut up. But what I'm learning now is, as I do my own mystical work and the stuff that I used to be so angry about in church because I felt that the stories were being distorted, now when I read the stories from these higher mystical perspectives, or they start to reveal themselves through these higher mystical perspectives, I see, first of all, why the child in me was so offended, number one, because inherently there was some sort of knowing or understanding that there was a deeper message to be carried within the stories. But now I love these stories because I read them from these higher perspectives. And so they're so rich. And so if you have, you know, regardless of what your faith, if you've got a Jewish background, you know, go back and read some of these scriptures from a mystical perspective. If you have a Christian background, or a Catholic background, then reflect on some of the stories that have meaning for you and read them from this mystical perspective, Or if you have, you know, if you're a Vedic or a Hindu or even Islamic, reading Islamic scripture from these mystical perspectives, there's vast mystical knowledge in all of these stories. And so that's why I like Christmas so much. And I get to celebrate it for myself in a really powerful way because I understand the story that's being told here. And for me, that's fun. That's powerful. That's really the gift of Christmas. It's not about the bows and, you know, the big Christmas trees and the parties. It's about something far more vast. So I want you to consider those things as it relates to Christmas. And then what I also, so I want, that wraps up the story. And I want to give you a sweet little Christmas ritual that you can carry forward. You can do it on winter solstice if you like, or you can break it apart and do it over the 12 days of Christmas that start at on December 21st and extend through what's called Epiphany, which is 12 days after Christmas, or sorry, 12 days after solstice, which is when these times, this, the energy of this time is really its most potent. So it's a very simple ritual. What I invite you to do is to get three candles. And again, if you got the gifts of the Magi box, I provide you with the ritual that allows you to use all the tools that you got in your gift of the Magi box. So if you already got a gift of the Magi box, you can go to the videos that I've provided for you to support you through the box. And if you don't have the box, then that's fine. You can still do a very simple ritual, but powerful ritual that supports the time. And what I encourage you to do is to set aside some time, again, on solstice or throughout the course of the 12 days of Christmas, and get three candles. If you can, get three candles, one black one, one white one, and one red one. And if you can't find three candles of those different colors, that doesn't matter. You can just use three candles of any color. And what you can do is you can take those candles. I just use the little taper candles that, or you can use a little votive candle. They don't have to be big, fancy candles. In fact, you know, you want them to be small because ideally you'd like them to be able to burn down quickly. And what you can do then is you can mark one of the candles, make a note of it that it's going to be your black candle. And what you can do is you can mark that with a square. You can carve a little square into your candle. And what that symbolizes is the black candle of matter. And then you can take your second candle and carve a little triangle into it. And that represents the white candle of spirit. And then you can take your third candle and you can carve a little circle with a dot into it. Just use a knife or a pen or a pencil to carve these symbols. And the third candle, you can carve a circle with a dot in the middle. And that's going to symbolize your red candle, the candle of divine light. And you set those up on your altar, or you melt the wax on the bottom of them so they'll stand up on a little plate. Then you take three little pieces of paper. They don't have to be big pieces of paper, and you know how I feel about brown paper bag. Just tiny little pieces of paper, maybe 3 inches square. And in the black, in front of the black candle on your first page, you're going to write the things that you want to let go of, that you want to release from your physical structure, your limitations. And that might be, you might just say, I want to release fear, victimization, procrastination. I want to release my inability to forgive, or I want to release my shyness, or I want to release my feeling of unworthiness, that I don't have anything to offer. Whatever it is, write five or six things just in single words: fear, unworthiness, shame, loneliness, lack, whatever it is. Take those five or six things and write them on your little sheet of brown paper. And then you're going to fold that little sheet of brown paper away from you, and you're going to put that in front of your first candle, the one that you've marked as the black candle with the square on it. Then you're going to take your second little sheet of paper. Again, there's just tiny little sheets, maybe 3 inches square. And you're going to write on that one, this is the stuff that is going to be the soul, what you're wanting to claim and activate. I'm activating my clarity. I'm activating my power. I'm activating my humor. I'm activating my joy. I'm activating my abundance. And you write those things on that little sheet of paper. And then you fold, because we're wanting to claim these things, you fold that little sheet of paper, you fold it towards yourself. You put that in front of your white candle. And then you'll take the third sheet of paper that has the circle with the dot in the middle of it. And this would be considered your red candle. and you write the things that you identify with as your divine nature. I am enlightened. I am powerful. I am prospered. I am loved. I am abundant. I am enlightened. Whatever those things are that you identify as your personal relationship with divine nature, that you want those things in you to become amplified. 5 or 6 of those things. I am divine. I am enlightened. I am powerful. I am graceful. I am loved. Whatever those things are for you, write them on that little sheet of paper. And again, and again, because we're calling it towards us, you would fold that towards you. And again, for those of you who purchased the Gifts of the Magi box, all of this stuff is included in the videos that I provide for you. And if you haven't gotten those videos yet, then I'm going to be sending out the links for everybody who purchased their Gifts of the Magi box, so you can watch those videos to walk you through the box. But for those of you who didn't get the box, this is a really simple way to do this. And so you'll have your 3 candles, one marked with the square that represents the black stage of the things you want to let go of, one marked with the triangle, which represents the things that you're wanting to purify and bring into balance and heighten within you. And then you've got your 3rd candle, which is marked with the circle with the dot in it, which represents the red candle, which is your divine nature. Right. So each of these 3 candles represent self is the black candle. Soul is the one with the triangle. Sun is the one with the circle with the square. So you've got all 3 elements of yourself included with these 3 candles. You've got your 3 pieces of paper in front of each candle. And then what you're going to do is you're going to light your candles. And you're going to be in your position of meditation. You get into your position point of peace and power. If you want to play some nice music, that's fine. If you want to burn some really lovely incense, that works really well. If you have some essential oils of lavender or frankincense or myrrh, if you can find some essential oils of frankincense and myrrh nearby you, then great. Get some of those. Just, you know, stuff that stimulates relaxation and ease. And then light your candles, get into your position point of meditation, and then spend time with the 1st candle, the one with the square, the stuff that you're letting go of, the limits of self. And just meditate on claiming that those things have been released. They are released. I am releasing my limitation. I'm releasing my lack. I'm releasing my fear. I'm releasing my concern. I'm releasing whatever it is that you're wanting to release and let go of, the things that no longer serve you. And you're declaring that they are released. Remember that when we do any of our mystical ritual work, we're not pleading or begging to God or source energy to give us stuff or do stuff for us. It doesn't work that way. When we're doing our ritual work, we are altering ourselves through the process of ritual. We are altering our consciousness. And so when we claim and intend the things that we want to release, and that we've written on that piece of paper, and that we've pushed away from us, that we've released, we say, it is done. I have released my limitations, whatever they are. And spend some time releasing them, saying, I release this. I release this. I let this go. I burn this. I blacken this. I surrender this. I sacrifice this. It's no longer essential to me. I don't need it anymore. And you claim and declare and decree that it is so. And spend some time with that black candle and spend some time with those things that you're burning away, that you're sacrificing within yourself. You don't need them anymore. Just like an oak tree does not need the shell that surrounds the acorn. If the oak tree was to hold on to that shell, the oak tree would never emerge. And so these things that we're releasing, they serve as the shell of restriction and constriction. We don't need them anymore. They must be sacrificed. And so this is what the 1st candle represents, and that 1st piece of paper represents the things that you will sacrifice willingly. Then when you've spent enough time with that 1st candle, then you move on to the 2nd candle and you look at your list of the things that you're wanting to allow to be activated. Your joy, your humor, your creativity, your love, your abundance, your sense of humor, your sexiness, your whatever it is, right? And if you want to write on both sides of that little sheet of paper, that's fine. We keep them small so that we can stay concise with the language. We don't want to get all wordy, because when you get too wordy, you're up in your head about it and it's not going to work. So you keep them concise. And so you spend time with the white candle, the soul, the one with the triangle on it. And you say, these are the things that I want to amplify and empower in myself. The things that I've shut away, the things that I've made myself wrong for having, my creativity and my humor, my joy and my talent and my, all of these things that are so good in me that I've not allowed myself to shine. And you spend time with saying, I claim my joy. I claim my humor. I claim my creativity. I claim my abundance. I claim my wealth. I claim my independence, whatever it is. Spend some time then embodying what it would feel like when those ideas are amplified and activated within you. Spend some time embodying that. And then when you feel done with that, then move on to spending time with the third candle, the one that would have the circle with the dot in the middle that would represent the red candle or the divine self. And this is where you claim your divine identity, where you say, I am one with source energy. I am loved. I am guided. I am protected. I am supported. I am prospered. I am blessed. I am one with everything. You know, those are the things you claim on that little list, and you spend time with that candle embodying those feelings. And spend some time in this ritual of stillness, especially now all three of these elements are going to be active. You're going to be in the process of releasing, of purifying, and of claiming all at the same time. So you want to be in that position point of peace and power and just be really considerate and conscious of what it is you're doing through the process. And what you can do is you can go around the circle of candles a few times, you know, work on the candle with the square of self, work on the candle with the triangle of soul, work on the candle with the circle with the dot of divine nature. And you can go, you know, back and forth and work on them a few times until you feel like you've gotten stable in this feeling of divine identity and this Christed light of peace and power and grace and nobility and wisdom and abundance and ease and joy and grace. And just spend some time in your meditation embodying that feeling. And what you're doing in this process is you're planting the seeds. You're activating the seeds of this consciousness to be now at this time of year. This is what we're doing. We're planting seeds so that down the road later in consciousness, we start to reap them in the spring when we hit spring equinox, that we start to reap the benefits of these seeds that we've planted. They start to sprout. They start to come to fruition. They start to grow, which is when Easter rolls around, we'll take advantage of that time in spring. The equinox of spring, we'll take advantage of another mystical time to do that. All right. And so spend time with this and understanding that this is what you're doing. You're declaring it as done. These seeds have been planted and activated in your consciousness. And now it's your job to nurture them, to care for them, to support them, to do your daily meditation practice, even if it's only a couple minutes a day, to just say, yes, my divine nature is activated and I embody it. And to go about your day walking and talking, embodying that power, embodying that clarity, and noticing when you fall into the habits of the limitations that were burned away in the first candle. And going, I see my fears there. Okay, just need some more refinement. I'm going to spend some time releasing that, really spending time looking at the fear and releasing it and applying the fire to it and witnessing it, right? So through the course of the year, you're embodying more and more and more and more of your Christed light and less and less and less and less of your restricted nature. And you eventually grow into being this divine entity. It's not just going to show up. You're not just going to wake up enlightened. It happens over time. Just like an oak tree does not just instantly show up being 100 feet tall with a, 100,000 acorns on it. It grows over time. It needs to grow over time. The physical structures that need to support that degree of energy have to be put in place. So that's what this ritual does. And so after you've spent time and you feel like you're solid in that feeling of grace and power and might and peace and abundance and clarity and joy and love and peace, really, peace is the crucial. Jesus, the Christ of light, was the Prince of Peace. He wasn't the Prince of Love. He wasn't the Prince of High Vibration. He wasn't the Prince of the Law of Attraction. He was the Prince of Peace. And as you move forward in the peace of knowing that these elements are activated within you, then that's how you step into the world. And then that's how you create your life. And that's how you influence people, right? So that over time, this becomes your true nature. It is already your true nature. We're just peeling away the stuff that's kept us from it. And then, so when you're done with the meditation, then you can do the sign of the cross. Remembering in our mystical practice, the sign of the cross represents the spiritual line of physical spirit that goes top to bottom, and the material feminine line that goes from left to right creates a cross up and down, left to right, right? The up and down line is positively electrically charged masculine spiritual energy. The line that goes left to right is negatively electrical charged feminine physical energy. Where those two intersect at our heart, this is why we do the sign of the cross, where it intersects at our heart is where our position point of power is. And so if we close our meditation with that sign of the cross and we say, it is done. Amen. Thank you for the gifts of Christmas. Thank you. And you get up and go about your day. And so you can do that, like I say, in one fell swoop on solstice. But what I like to do is I like to do it once a day for 12 days over the 12 days of Christmas, starting at solstice and wrapping up on the 3rd or the 4th of January, right? At Epiphany. And it ties the little bow. It says, it is done. These seeds have been planted in the womb of the earth, and they will sprout in the spring when, if I continue to maintain them, it's done. And then once those 12 ceremonies are done, you can just go about your life. You don't have to go back and visit them. They've been planted in your seeds of consciousness. Again, you're not begging God to do anything for you. You're not trying to attract this stuff. You're stimulating the seeds of these consciousnesses within your light, within your consciousness, so that they'll grow and manifest themselves and materialize in the physical world, right? As mystics, we never beg. We're not doing any of our mystical work to try to change God or to try to change the universe. We're doing our mystical work so that we can alter our consciousness, so that we can refine our inner nature, so that on the outer nature, then our outer world starts to represent the inner world, right? Knowing our equation that the inner world shapes our outer world, that over time, as we refine our inner world, that over time, these things will start to take shape within our physical world and manifest in the ways that we want them to, right? It's a simple, elegant, beautiful ritual. And I love doing it. And that's why I built the Gifts of the Magi box for you guys who purchased it, because it brings all of these tools into play. But again, if you don't have the box, no worries. Three simple candles will do the trick. Just carve the symbols in each candle, understand what each candle represents and the things that you want to let go, the things you want to purify and amplify, and your divine nature, and use them in that way. And dedicate the time required over the holidays, and think of it as a gift, really, the 12 days of Christmas. We use that time mystically. As the divine gift that it is, it will really start to serve you in the new year. So that's the teaching and the class for today. And I got a couple of questions that I want to answer that came in. that came in. So now is our chance to ask questions. So if you're on the call, you can type in your question and ask in the Q&A. Or I know a couple of you guys sent in emails for me who couldn't join me live on the call. And so I'm going to answer those. And if you're on the call and you want to raise your hand, you can do that too. So we'll take some time to answer some questions here. So we got a question from dear Christine. Christine says, dear Simone, it has come to my attention during meditation that sometimes I take my spiritual practice too seriously and I need to lighten up. I love my spiritual work, but sometimes I'm too hard on myself. It's like I feel I have to accomplish so much with so little time. I'm wondering if you have some tips on how I can remain more childlike and just bring in more fun. Thank you so much. Love, Christine. And P.S. wishing you and everyone in membership a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Yes, dear Christine. Well, that does tend to be a foible for us spiritual adventurers, doesn't it? We take ourselves so very, very seriously. And we think that if we're not doing it, you know, perfectly 20 minutes every day, that, you know, it's just not going to work right. And I get it. I'm that way in a lot of ways. But if you have listened to the last installment of the ABCs of modern mysticism at the letter P, one of the letter P's is play. And it's just so interesting to me, you know, when I'm doing coaching with people and I'll say, you know, when was the last time you played? And they'll be like, like they can't find play. And it's important to realize that this, you know, in mystical teachings, you know, even in the Bible, it says that the children are going to be are the ones who have the most engagement with source energy. Well, why? Because they love to play. And so, yes, we take it seriously. Yes, there are things we need to understand. Absolutely. We need to understand the principles of it. 1 + 1 = 2. Okay, there's a principle. So it's important that we know the rules of the game. But once we feel like we've got them comfortably under our belt, then it becomes our great joy and our great privilege to play. So how can you bring more play into your practice? Well, you can take your meditation off of the pillow. And you know, you guys have heard me say this over and over again. It's if you can't take your meditative practice out into the world, if you can't take that frequency of peace and power and divine centeredness out into the world when you're standing in line at the grocery store or sitting in carpool lane, or then so what? So I want you to be able to take your spiritual practice out into the world and screw around with it, you know, to really feel free to, you know, I would say to get a pot of noodles and throw them all against the wall and see what sticks. And what you're going to find is that you can play with your spiritual practice and you know, unknowingly with other people, you can use it while you're standing in line, while you're paying for your groceries. Okay, play with your spiritual practice. See if you can influence the person standing away from you. See if you can play with your, you know, your influential field, your bubble of influence, and pull it in really close, and then go out and talk to somebody at the bank and push that field of influence out really wide and play with it like a kid would play with a balloon. Or, you know, even in activating your physical nature while you're out walking, take a few skips. You might think you look like a total doofus, or, you know, do it in private. You know, when I walk with Lily, I walk with her every day, and that's just as much a part of my spiritual practice as any of the morning meditations that I do. And Lily is such a wonderful, as she was well aware here at the beginning, you know, she decided that was the best time to start to chew on things. She's a wonderful reminder for me to play. And what she'll do when we're out walking, if she feels me getting really serious, is she'll go after my shoelaces to get me to you know, she'll play a game of chase with my shoes, and she'll try to untie my shoelaces while we're walking. And what that does is it gets me to start to skip and to start to chase. And then I chase her, and she gets me all zoomed up and playful. So I'm grateful for my little dog because she reminds me when to lighten up. And so look at your own world. Where can you cultivate play with your kids? I don't want you to think of your spiritual practice, you know, the work we do in modern mystics, as as the 20 or 30 minutes in a day where you do your spiritual practice. I don't want you to think of it that way. I want you to think of your entire life as a ceremony. Your entire life is an experience of spirit in all of its joy and its intensity and its happiness and its sexiness and its messiness and its dirtiness and its cleanliness and its baby puke and its forest fires and its lovemaking and its chocolate. And, you know, think of this whole thing is an experiment. And for source energy, it is a game. It is play. For self, self takes it very, very seriously. Right. And so if you find yourself taking things very, very seriously, go, huh, all right, I'm taking this very, very seriously. This means I'm coming from self, meaning I think I might be getting it wrong, or I'm not doing it long enough, or I'm making it really more important than it needs to be. And if we're coming from self, we're going to take things really seriously, self, and we're going to take it really personally. Self takes things really personally, and it takes things very seriously because it's afraid if it gets it wrong, it will be destroyed, or it will be shamed, or it won't get it right, or that people will make fun of it. And it gets all, you know, and if it takes it personally, you know, it starts to take things personally because it has all of this stuff invested in it. So if you find yourself taking things really seriously, go, huh, all right, well, I'm coming from self there, because self takes things personally and takes things very seriously as it relates to anything in life. Soul looks at things like, huh, that's really interesting. That's interesting. It just witnesses and observes and like, interesting, right? So that's why whenever we're doing our mystical work, I always say to you to not get engaged in stuff energetically to come from self. I always say, go look at it and witness it from that place of interest. What's the energy going on here? And just witness it and observe it and be like, wow, that's really interesting. Donald Trump, wow, he's really interesting. What's really going on here? Beyond the politics, there's something else going on here. That's the soul being like, this is really interesting. And then the divine nature, the God force in you, that red candle in you, it knows it's just a game. It's play. You know, it's using our life as an opportunity to experience and express itself through play. And it plays with creating things. It plays with creating our body. It plays with creating our environment. It plays with creating outcomes. And so if we can settle into that idea of, if I'm coming from my divine noble self, not my limited structured self, then I know that I can play, that this is play. You know, just think of the source energy when it was creating animals, right? I'd like to create, it has this impulse to create a horse with stripes. That's playful. Ooh, and now I'm going to create a horse with a really, really, really long neck and really long legs. And instead of stripes, I'm going to play with spots. Oh, wow, that's cool. A giraffe, neato. Oh, and I'm going to play with creating a platypus. I'm going to take the duck, the bill of a duck that I created before, and the tail of a beaver, and I'm going to slap it over here, and the webbed feet of an otter. Yeah, cool. And I'm going to slap all this stuff together. Wow, what do you get? Oh, that was fun. And now I'm going to create another thing with big, big gray skin and long, long teeth that come out of its nose, and this long nose that can reach to tall plants. Ooh, that's playful. Ooh, and now I'm going to play with creating a solar system. Wow, that's neat. And a star's going to blow up. Well, that was really kind of cool. Look at how that exploded. And it becomes this process of play. And so I want you to be able, how do you bring in more play? That you understand that the play and improvisation and imagination and that is the very essence of the source energy, God force within us. Itself. That when we're uber serious, it's got to look like this, and it's got to take shape like this, and it's got to happen in this time zone and in this time frame and by this end date, that's when we know we're coming from the limits of self. And you'll feel it. Like you say, you're starting, you notice when you catch yourself and you're taking things too seriously. Okay, well, what would you do then if you knew from your godlike nature, your source energy self, that everything is fine, you cannot be destroyed, you and your true nature, not your Christine self, but you and your true nature can never be destroyed, possesses everything it could ever want now, has all of the abundance it would now possess. If you identified with that as true, how would you spend your time? Would you spend your time grinding things out? Or would you spend your time playing and experimenting? You know, that's why I started House of the Apothecary, my new business that I'm going to launch more profoundly in the new year. That's why I started that, and how it came into being was because I was having so much fun playing with alchemy, playing with herbs, playing with magic, playing with elixirs, playing with blends. I was playing. What was fun for me beyond doing the mystical work and the mystical study? What is fun for you? And some people will say, you know what? I don't know. It's been so long since I've had fun. All right. Well, then go practice having fun. Go bowling. Nope, that wasn't it. All right. Go rock climbing. Ooh, that was interesting. Oh, start to take a belly dancing class. Go to take judo. Go to a boxing class. Go take an art class. Go roll around in the backyard with your kids. Plant a garden. Right? Come on retreat with me. There's a little hint. I'm doing a retreat coming up at the end of March. It's short notice, but it's a magical opportunity, and I'm going to share that with you some more. But come on retreat with me. Go on retreat with some friends. What is fun for you? Go out in the world and figure it out. It's not just going to drop in your lap, right? But for me, alchemy and herbs and mixing those things was fun, and I enjoyed it, and I could do it all day. And in that process of play for me, something new emerged, right? My spiritual practice got even more powerful. My sense of confidence expanded even more, right? And a new company was born, House of the Sun Apothecary, right? Which is going to start to do things. And that came through play, right? Didn't come through my serious practice, came through play. So consider the things that are playful for you. The things that you can do that you don't need have to have any beneficial outcome out of them at all. You know, part of the fun of me building the Gifts of the Magi box is I got to play. I got to make homemade chocolates. I got to craft a ritual. I got to create elixirs. It just, and in the beginning, I was just doing it because it was such fun. And then I went, Oh, this is so much fun. I can share this with other people. Isn't this freaking cool? And it came from play, right? But at first, it was just for the sheer fun of it. And, you know, and I want that to continue to be what drives not only House of the Apothecary, but the work that we do. Yes, there's a serious nature to it, but the sheer fun of it, right? It's such fun to be able to teach you guys. It's such fun and play for me to be able to hear you guys get epiphanies. Even if you're struggling, even if you're going through a tough time, yes, I'll still stand in the sacredness of that. But from the higher perspective, both my higher self and your higher self knows that no matter what you might be going through in this world right now, it's play for our divine self. It's just play. So, you know, go back to your childhood self and ask yourself, what did I love to do? I love to horseback ride, or I love to swim, or I love to dance, or I love to paint, or I love to sing. And I didn't mind if I wasn't good at it. I didn't mind if when I danced, I looked like I had two left feet. Okay, let's bring that forward and allow that to come alive in you. But at first, because especially if you're out of practice, and if you've taken life very seriously, which is an element of self, then it's going to take a while to give that inner child in you permission. And so when you do your sacred ritual for solstice, that can be a part of the thing that you called forward with your second candle. I call forward my sense of play. I call forward my childlike curiosity. I call forward my childlike sense of adventure. Right? My lack of fear of the unknown. I call all of that forward So you can add that request to your ritual, and it will start to come online. You know, when we're young, we're oftentimes so shamed for having that idea of play, especially if you grew up in a tough life. You know, my father died when I was 7 years old, and he'd been sick for a while. And prior to that, my mom had been sick before my dad got sick. And so my life as a child was very, very serious, right? The idea of play for me was, I didn't feel comfortable with it at all. I was very concerned about, you know, my frivolity as a child. And so it's only as I've gotten older that I've allowed that part of myself to come out. And as we dive more and more deeply into our mystical practice, that part of your authentic nature, the part of your divine nature that for this is all a game. It's like, that starts to come online and become activated. And you're like, huh, I don't need to take this so seriously because it's all there for me anyway. It's all there. I just need to give it room to grow. So that's what I would suggest for you. And, you know, that can be part of your New Year's agreement with yourself. You're like, I'm going to go find three things that I just want to investigate to see if those things are fun for me. And I'm going to try and see. And if they're fun, you know, you can check off your list of three things. I'm going to go to dance class. I'm going to go to bowling class. I'm going to go take a boxing class. Let's just see if that's fun. And then you'll find one or two or three that are fun. And you can add those things to your spiritual practice. They become a part of your spiritual practice. They're not something that you do that takes time away from your spiritual practice. They become a part of your spiritual practice, right? The stuff that we do that's playful, that is just as important to our spiritual practice as the intense stuff we do in our shadow work and in our the work on our pillow, and the work in our meditation, just as important, equally as important, right? Children and animals learn through play, right? It's not like a mama lion sits down with the baby lions and says, okay, you want to chase a cheetah? Here's the trajectory, and this is how fast they're, or an antelope. This is the trajectory they're going to follow, and this is the speed you need to maintain in order to bring that antelope down. No, the little baby lions learn by chasing their brothers and sisters around, and then they learn by chasing their mom and dad's tail, and they learn to retract their claws at the right time when they jump on their big daddy lion and they've forgotten to retract their claws, and daddy lion growls at them or cuffs them, right? A baby cheetah learns how to chase its prey by chasing its brothers and sisters, right? So play is a very important part of our spiritual practice. I don't want you to think that it's separate from it. So that's how I would encourage you to investigate that. All right. So I hope that answers that for you, dear Christine. Thank you so much for being such a dedicated member and contributing in the beautiful ways that you do. So thank you for that. Okay. Let's see here. Okay. All right. Question from Bianca, our dear member from Germany. And Bianca says, hi, Simone. My question this time is related to the letter L, love. Oh, and by the way, the final part of the ABCs will be posted later this weekend. So you'll have T through Z wrapping us up for the end of the year. And then our last official coaching call for December will happen, I think it's December 30th. I got to double check, but we've got one more coaching call. So, but this question is from Bianca, and she says, my question this time is related to the letter L for love. I'm repeating the Great Visioneering course from last November, and I started the power exercise again. I call back my power wherever I lost it, wherever I've given away, wherever it was taken away from me. And while I'm doing this, my mind is running in the background and is having a conversation on its own. What is that power? It's energy. reverse rhyme. Bianca's a writer, so she likes to clarify her things in rhyme and story, which I absolutely love, and which is an indication of play, to be able to bring your spiritual practice into the things that you're already doing really well. But Bianca's reverse rhyme says, I give back all energy that is not mine to whom it belongs. I give back all negative energy attached me to the sender. Forward rhyme, I call back my energy wherever I have and where did I lose it? Where have I given it away? Where is it? Where did I lose the utmost part of my energy and power? And she discovers she's lost her power in love. So much energy bound in love. Still loving those who don't love me anymore. I've given away too much love energy. Well, I call it back. Yes, why not? Let's experiment. I call back my love, all that bits and pieces of my love mistreated, not wanted, not appreciated, hurt, broken, stuck. I call back my love, she says in capital letters with an exclamation point. And she says, pause, silence, doubt, guilt. How petty is that? What a lack of generosity. How can I dare to call back my love? This is for sure not allowed. But by whom? Who said that? In any case, it seems politically not noble, mystically even less. Or what do you say about that? I love reading Bianca's letters. She's such a wordsmith. And you know, and her spiritual work is emerging through the way she writes. And so thank you for this beautiful letter. And thank you for doing the work. And thank you for investigating. And thank you for inquiring. And thank you for seeing what pops up in your adventure, in your inquiry. Remember that one of our last letters was the letter Q, to question, going, huh, what is that? What happens if I call back my love? What emerges from that? And to be directed by your intuition, to call back your love where it's been thwarted and wasted and stepped on and trodden and mishandled and you've been unceremoniously giving it out like, you know, so much cotton candy, and it's just been, people have been dismissing it. Well, that is a very powerful mystical tool. And I agree with your statement to call back your love where it's been wasted and where it's been thwarted and where it's costing you to do that. This is what is meant by the mystical statement. Do not cast thy pearls before swine. It's important to understand, and it relates too to the not only to the Q question of the Q letter of questioning, but the Q level of quality, that there's so many misconceptions about this idea of love, and that to be spiritual, you have to love everyone and love everything and just love, because we are all one. And it's our job as spiritual people to love everyone and love everything, even if they abuse us, even if they mishandle us, even if they don't appreciate us or value it, that I just got to keep loving because that's what's spiritual. Well, that is wrong. That is not okay. That is an error of massive proportion. This speaks to the idea of quality. You know, when we continue to pour energy into people and things that do not value and honor and use the things that we present to them, we become responsible for wasting our energy. Now, as mystics, we still have compassion for them and understand that they are human beings having their spiritual experience and that they are whatever stage they're at in their journey. But we become very conscious of how we expend our love, of where we plant it. If we're going to plant it before swine, if we're going to cast our pearls before swine, this is, it's in the Bible. Jesus said, caution, do not cast your pearls before swine. It will be, if we cast our pearls before swine, the swine will stamp mud all over it. They will not be, those pearls will not be honored. Those pearls will not be valued. Those pearls will not be cherished. They will not be respected. They will not be used. And we, as the person who tossed those pearls down, will certainly not be valued or respected. And it is the same with our love and our energy of any kind, right? There are people in the world who, if we're wanting to partner with them as friends, as lovers, as family, as clients, as students, as coaches, that we look at them very clearly with very clear eyes using the cue of the questions of quality. And while we have love and from the higher perspective that all people are here and they're doing the best they can, but we also look at this idea of it being an exchange of energy. And if we are constantly putting energy into somebody, as in this idea of pearls before swine, and that energy is not being in any way nurtured, nourished, supported, returned, then we've got to be very aware of that. And listen, there are some people in our lives who simply don't have the capacity for it. They just don't have the tools. They're not equipped. Okay, that's fine. You can still choose to be graceful and kind and compassionate and supportive and loving with them to an extent. But then there are others who are capable and just choose not to be. There are people who are very conscious and awake and do their very best to be sure that when love is given, that in some way, shape, or form, love is returned, that there is an energy exchange, a balanced organic energy exchange. Now, this might be viewed as conditional, to be sure. And in some ways, in order for us to maintain our sense of balance while we're going through our mystical process, sometimes it does have to be conditional. Sometimes we have to call our power back and our love back from people who don't care for it, who abuse us in the process, who look at it and say it's never enough, or who look at it and say, that doesn't mean anything to me. And so then we go, huh, I see how my pearls are being honored. And then you get to make a choice. You could say, you could continue to throw those pearls down and send out your energetic resources and have those the swine, the people who are unrespecting, continue to abuse it, continue to waste it, continue to spread mud all over it, continue to eat it and shit it out, and not give it any value at all. And if that's a choice you continue to make, well, then that's a choice that is in your hands. That if you're going to continue to put that energy forward and it's going to continue to be wasted, and you're not paying attention and saying, wow, my gifts are being wasted in the directions that I'm wasting it, well, I'm going to stop doing that. My love is no value to these people. It's not serving them in any way. They're not using it. Love is only valuable when we can give it in a meaningful way, and it's used in a meaningful way. Even if, you know, they say love heals everything to a certain degree, yes, but only if it can be received can the love then heal or transform or support. You know, we can puke love all over people all the time, but if they're not willing to accept it and receive it, then it does no good. It just becomes this endless pit, this endless abyss that leaves us as the giver burned out, and the receiver, you know, they get frustrated because they don't have the skills, the capacity to receive. So this is a very intricate conversation as it relates to quality. When, as mystics, I'm going to speak for myself here. When I started to make, I was aware of this practice and felt very familiar with this idea of loving people who were abusive to me, or loving people who didn't have, you know, weren't interested in being my friends, or, you know, trying to give compassion and understanding and trying to be generous to people who could give a rat's ass, didn't care about what I was offering them. And over time, resentment began to build in me. And I thought, why am I doing this? This person doesn't want to hear me or see me or see any value in the stuff that I'm offering. So I'm going to stop. And in that moment where I stopped, I still had compassion for them as a human being, but I wasn't casting my pearls before them in all of this beautiful, loving energy that I was offering them, only to have it thrown back in my face or shit all over or ignored. I stopped doing that. When I stepped into my mystical power, I started to think, I want people in my life who I am glad to love and spew all of my generosity over. Those are the people who see that love and appreciate that love and will gladly return that love, and who want an experience of community and communion with me. I will gladly share that with them. But for people whom aren't interested, I don't have the time for them anymore. They do not occupy space in my awareness. Now, of course, I still wish them well. I don't wish them harm or ill will, but they do not get to experience the pearls of my love anymore. That is for me. That is for my sacred friends, my sacred clients, my sacred members, the people who are walking this path with me, who are wanting things like that, to have those exchanges of love and connection and engagement and relationship with me to be valid and of high quality, then they'll get the best of me at every given moment. But to continue to cast my pearls before swine, I just don't do it anymore. It doesn't mean I'm not spiritual. This is the idea of quality. What kind of people do you want in your life? People who disrespect you, people who abuse you, low quality, unrefined, uneducated people who don't rise to your level of excellence. That's fine. Okay. But I won't share deep communion with those people. I won't share love with those people. Because my love is precious, as is your love is precious and needs to be treated as such. And when we step into our mystical power and we start to really embrace our self-worth and our self-value, and we start to claim our value, and we claim how important we are, and we claim how loved we are by the divine universe, and we start to claim our worth, we'll stop throwing our pearls around to the swine. We'll just stop doing it. Right. I'm always intrigued by people who in spiritual practice will say, I love everybody. And I know that can't be true, because we don't know everybody. And there are going to be people out in the world that you don't like. And that's okay. There are people in the world that I don't like. And I'm okay with saying that. Does that make me less spiritual? No. It makes me a person who's able to discern, is that somebody that I want to spend time with? No, it's not. Just like, do I like, are there any vegetables that I don't like? I don't like kale. Contrary to popular belief, not everybody in California likes to eat kale. I do not like kale, so I'm not going to eat kale. I'm not going to spend time with kale. I'm not going to shop for it. I'm not going to try to figure out how to cook it. I don't like kale. Does that make me not spiritual because I don't like kale? No, it's an expression of what the things are that I believe have quality in my life. And the same thing applies to people. We need to let ourselves off the hook and break this spell that says to be spiritual means we have to love everyone and everything. It's simply not true. As human beings, as people with discernment and choice and clarity, we get to decide what has meaning for us, the kinds of people we like to spend time with, the kinds of food we like to eat, the kinds of things and activities we like to spend our time involving ourselves in, right? Do I want to go and work in a meth lab and grow and use chemistry to make drugs? no, the kind of people who want to use chemistry to do that, I don't care for them. I don't want to hang out with those kind of people. Now, if I found a group of alchemists who want to use chemistry to, you know, make powerful elixirs that heal and help and support and transform, you know, a different kind of chemistry lab, then, oh man, those are the kind of people that I want to hang out with, the kind of people who I will generously share my love with. The kind of people who are, you know, really bringing their light into creating something good. I like those kind of people. I could even love those kind of people. But somebody who's using chemistry to create drugs, I don't love those kind of people. I don't want to spend time with those kind of people. They are not my kind of people. And that's okay. For me to be able to make that choice, for you to be able to make that choice, is a part of our mystical, God-given choice of discernment. To say, this is my tribe. This is my community. These are the people that I can really engage with and that I can really share my love with in a meaningful way. So is it mystically noble to call back your love from the people who would treat it like the swine treat the pearl? Absolutely. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Because what that then empowers you to do is it empowers you to call all of that energy back and hold it within yourself and nurture it and nourish it and polish it up and infuse it with your power. So that when you're out and about in the world, that love sort of bubbles out of you. And then when you have a noble engagement with somebody who you have a connection with, a really authentic connection, then and you say, man, this person has the qualities that I respect and admire and enjoy, and I want to grow even more in myself, then your love gets to authentically just pour out of you. And because these people have the same desires and the same level of excellence in themselves, their love pours out of them. And then there's this divine, awesome, authentic, truly pure and unconditional love that is born out of that. Right? But it's only when we stop casting our pearls before swine and we call all of that power back, and we use our God-given gift of discernment to say, this is quality to me. This is excellence to me. These are the kind of people that I love spending time with. And these are the kind of people that I simply don't care for. That's not discrimination in the way that discrimination has been so wrongly viewed right now. Right? There are some people out there who are, their level of excellence is not high. And that's just the way it is. There's no judgment in that. It's just the way it is. I always say this, you can taste a really awesome, excellent, high quality piece of chocolate, and you can taste a really low quality piece of chocolate, and you'll know in a heartbeat which one is excellent and which one is less than excellent. And you get to choose. You get to say, I like this one. This is the one I'm going to eat. I'm not going to spend my time with this other one. You have permission to do that. You have permission. If somebody was to show up and give you a Porsche sports car, the top of the line, most beautiful, glamorous, awesome Porsche or Jaguar or Mercedes, beautiful sports car, they were going to show up with a car that, you know, was the wheels were falling off, you would get to choose quality. That is our gift. And we're being told in the world that we're not allowed to exercise that level of discernment, that we've just got to love everybody and we've got to love everything. And if we don't, then that we're racist or we're discriminatory or we're sexist or we're this or we're that. That whole thing that's going out in the world today that says we have to love everyone and everything limits our ability to use our sovereign power. That we're told what words are okay to use. We're not allowed to use certain words. We're not allowed to have certain thoughts. We're not allowed to like certain people. We've got to like and love everybody. We've got to accept everything. It's wrong. It's wrong-hearted. What it does is it levels the playing field. It says everybody is the same across the board. Now, it's true, everybody is human, absolutely. But there are people on the planet that have higher levels of excellence, higher levels of consciousness. They are more refined in their levels of wisdom and love and clarity and creativity. And there are people who are not as excellent. And that's just what's true. Do I hate those people who are less than? I don't really give them too much thought. Right? So you start to think of, who is going to really honor what I have to offer? And that applies to the people that you love in your life, the people in your family, the people who you work with as clients, the people who you work with in your job, who employ you, who you employ. But the more you honor your value, you are valuable. Your love, your grace, your power, your kindness, your compassion, your wisdom, your words is so valuable and so good and has so much worth to it and is so important. And when you start to claim the value of what you do and what you offer and who you are, you will stop giving those gems and those pearls to people who do not honor them. You'll just say, no, these things are far too valuable for me to just be spewing all over the place because I'm told in spiritual practice that that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And you just stop and you pay very close attention. You get to meet somebody and you spend time with them and you think, is this person worthy of all of the goodness that I have to offer? Will they value it as much as I value it? If I see that they will, then I will share it with them. But until then, I'll keep it between me. And if it's just me and God, then I'll keep it there. Right? And the more self-value and the more self-worth you start to develop, the more you start to see yourself as worthy and valuable and unconditionally loved by the creative force, and you see how valuable that is within yourself, then you'll stop wasting it on other people. And that will be okay. That will be okay. I have no guilt and no shame about pulling my love away from people who don't value it, who don't want it, who don't deserve it. None. At first I did. I felt bad about it because, this isn't very spiritual. But then I started to see how the equation started to shift. The more my mystical practice and my awareness started to expand, I thought, these people, they don't understand the equation. And so I'm not going to cast my pearls before them anymore. And so I don't. And they've gone on with their life and they've been fine. They don't miss me. And that's okay. I don't hold any judgment about that. You know, their life is just fine and dandy. Okay. So it's a really good question and really excellent work in your inquiry and going through that process. And such a wonderful discovery. Wow. I have so much invested in love. Holy moly, do I see where I'm leaking like a sieve? Oh, okay, I don't need to love everyone and everything. And oh man, what a wonderful discovery, Bianca. What a killer discovery. Man, that is a huge mystical discovery for you. Booyah. When we make those kind of discoveries, as your teacher, I give you a gold star. Congratulations. Call it all back. Call all of that love back and then sit with it and nurture it and make it juicy and big and awesome within yourself so that it gets just so supercharged that when you meet somebody who is at that level of quality and alignment and excellence, who will honor it and honor you and see you, then that person will get all of you. They'll get every last bit of love that you've got. And it will become this self-fulfilling prophecy because they'll be giving all of their love to you. And it will be just this ooey gooey love fest mess that nobody is depleted in any way, shape or form. No one is violated. No one is made to feel less than. And it's a really awesome equation. It's a wonderful question. Thank you for asking it. All right. Good work, guys. Christine says, thank you so much, Christine. I hope that answered your question for you, Christine, as it relates to your idea of play. And you know what I want you to do, Christine, while you're on the call here? I want you to, just for kicks and giggles, just for fun, on the Q&A, I want you to type out what things that you would do that you think that are just coming to mind, but in the new year you could go, all right, I'm going to go play. So I want you to, right here on the Q&A, I want you to type in some things that you think you might be able to use as an extension of play. All right. So that's what I want you to do here while you're with me right now on the page. And again, don't take it seriously. If it's skydiving, if it's balloon making, if it's cake baking, if it's belly dancing, if it's rolling around in the front yard making snow angels, then let's hear it. All right, guys. Okay. All right, so we've got a hand up. And this is Christina. Hi, Christina.
Oh, my God. I am so glad to talk to you. Hi.
Hi.
Wishing you the blessings of the Christmas, my friend, and all of this stuff. Oh, my God, honey, did you see my email?
I did, saying that you were going to try and get on the call, yep.
Yeah, but did you see the one I sent you earlier in the week?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that, yeah, good, because that was like a really important email for me to write and just to, you know, in honoring of you and in me and just, you know, so that you were aware and that I was aware and, you know, just, that was a huge step for me to write that to you.
Well, thank you for writing it.
I didn't know. Was it okay to have done that?
Yeah. And just, you know, just understand that I get 100 emails a day. So,
oh, shit.
So, you know, I don't respond to all of them. I can't. So I, you know that I get them. And if I can respond, I will. And I do, but,
okay.
Yeah. So what's your question?
No, and I just wanted to make sure it was okay. Anyhow, honey, what's really going on is the I've fallen. I was doing the practices, and then and I'm seeing different positive things happening where newer people are coming into my life and inviting me, you know, and they're all women, which is very interesting. You know, to go do this or to go do that. And then, you know, do I have the funds to participate? You know, that's another issue. But, you know, someone's invited me for Christmas. Someone wanted to go out for a coffee, you know, that type of thing. What has not changed yet, though, is the finances. What's happened is that every time I have to deal with a financial thing, it repings the PTSD and I go in terror and I lose everything. And I'm actually sitting here today with a kidney attack. I've been feeling pain for a few days and then I really had very severe just now. And I kind of texted about half a dozen different naturopaths in different locations. And one got back to me and told me what to do, as well as doing some research on the internet. So I know what to go and do. And that apparently is very tied in to terror, and especially as a child, that can cause this kind of kidney thing. So and apparently I do have a small kidney stone. So with the work that I've done, and when I see the results that I have, and those are mainly doing the work in my home, you know, in my room at my house, and in the apartment where I've rented a room. And even my roommate, I'm watching her change around me, mm-hmm. and, you know, upping her level of performance and responsibility and cleanliness.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I go out into the world, and there's several million people in the city, and the subways, and it's also freezing, we were like minus 20, minus 15, so that's like minus 5 or 6 degrees in your temperature. It's very hard on me. and really going into terror whether I'm going to live or die, because I literally don't even have any more money for food now for the rest of the month. I'm supposed to go out and buy these homeopathics right now, and I don't know how that's happening. And a very special water that apparently dissolves kidney stones from Italy. So I keep going back into the terror, and I haven't been able yet to break this loop. And I really do look terrible now. My roots haven't been done in months. My hair hasn't been cut. I don't have proper makeup. There's holes in my really good clothes.
I'm going to stop you. I got to stop you because we're running a program. We're running a program. And so this is a part of mastery, is being able to catch ourselves when that stuff happens. And so when we're getting ready for a big breakthrough, so what I want to acknowledge for you is I want to acknowledge the fact that you're noticing subtle little shifts happening. Your roommate has started to shift. Okay. All right. That's gold star. Wow, okay. So it's like, all right, that's one thing. And you're noticing that on the whole, you're feeling, now there are times when you're shifted out, that's fine, okay, we'll put the pin in that for a second, but there are times when you're noticing, I'm feeling a greater sense of clarity, I'm feeling a greater sense of balance, okay, all right, there's another little gold star, okay. But when you get triggered is when you go out into the world, or when you look at your bank account, or when you look at the stuff that you don't have. So what I want you guys to realize is, as we're moving forward in our mystical work, and Joe Dispenza uses the term breaking the habit of being ourselves. When we're stepping into our authentic divine nature, all of the stuff that we're talking about mystically speaking, as we move from self into soul into divine identity, is the habit, we're breaking the habit of being ourselves. And so what happens is, yes, you go out into the physical world and something, you get a smell of a cookie, or you hear traffic go by and you're suddenly triggered. Triggered being a really sort of kitschy word that everybody's using right now. I'm being triggered. Well, remember that when you get triggered, when any of us get triggered, it's a memory. It's a program, it's rewiring that's happening in our body that is responding to something in our environment that may or may not even be a threat. The millions of people in your world, really at the root of them, they're not a threat to you, but your body and your mind perceives it as such. And so it's important that we recognize that our part of our diligence, and this kind of speaks to, I understand what Christine was saying when she says, I'm taking my spiritual practice very seriously. Well, this is the part of the practice that we do have to take seriously, because it's the stuff that runs unconsciously. And listen, I check in with myself about when it's a old program that runs with me. I check in with myself all day, every day, especially when I'm making big strides forward in doing new things that I've never done before, right? So realize that in the awareness, to get new results, you have to do different things. We can't continue to do the same stuff and get different results, right? We've heard that 1,000 times before. And so as we're doing this work, as you're doing the work to shape and transform and reform, what happens is the old self, number one, gets hypersensitive to change. It wants things to stay the same. It feels comfortable in the stuff that it knows. And so it's holding on to the stuff that it knows, that it understands, that it's familiar with. Your system is familiar with the trauma. Your system is familiar with the story. Your system is familiar with the PSD. Your system is familiar with the lack. And so in order for that structure to stay intact, it needs to continue to replay it. Replay, 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 replay. You could be sitting on your sofa having a cup of tea, and suddenly your old self will be like, oh my God, how am I going to pay my bills tomorrow? Blah, blah, blah. And it starts to run. And we have to be able to catch it when it does that. And it's really hard to do. It's like a greased pig. It is slippery, and it will try to slip away, and it will start to say, look at this. This isn't working. This isn't working. This isn't working. There's still no money in the bank account. My roots are 4 inches long. I have holes in my shoes. It's 40 degrees below. This, that's the program. And so that's why I had to stop you, because that's the program running. And so you have to catch that program and separate yourself, Christina, and watch it, and just watch it. And it's going to run, and it's going to run, and it's going to run. And when we catch it and we watch it, it starts to lose its power, because it becomes conscious. And the moment something becomes conscious, it stops being unconscious and then stops running us and ruling us and ruling your adrenal glands. Your adrenal glands sit on top of your kidneys. And if your adrenal glands are overtaxed, then they are going to, by virtue of nature, kind of what we were talking about with Bianca, they're going to suck, the kidneys are going to suck the energy out of the adrenal glands. The adrenal glands are giving so much love, so much energy, so much, that the kidneys are going to pull that as a resource, and they're going to get worn out. So that would be the connection between cortisol, adrenaline, your adrenal glands, and your kidneys, which is causing this problem in your kidneys. Now, if a kidney doesn't function right and isn't able to release stuff, stones will develop, and pain will ensue. So there's a self-fulfilling cycle and prophecy going on within your world. What will really help you is to, first of all, acknowledge the tiny little shifts and changes, because they're not going to happen. The finances, because it's been such a big crutch and devastation for you for so long, that your finances, and I'm going to say this just clear out of the bat, your finances is going to be one of the last things to move.
The thing is, if I literally do not have, I'm counting pennies to be able to get on a bus.
It's always
in my face. My phone may be cut off. It's always in my face.
Okay.
I've lived on liquids the last few weeks. I mean, this is insane.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I survive? How do I not go into fear when I am literally at that level, when the lining of my coat is being safety pinned in, where there are holes in my boots and it's minus 20.
Okay.
I mean, it's always there.
Christina, stop. Breathe.
Yeah.
Okay. Stop and breathe. Yes, I've been where you are. I have been where you are. I have been where you are. I know how absolutely fucking terrifying it is. But you have to be able to, if it means going to Salvation Army and getting a new coat, right? And I've been where you are because I did the same things that you did. I went and I asked friends for support. And eventually I got tired of asking friends for support. I said, okay, you know what? I'm stepping into my own power. And what if all of those friends disappeared? Am I so unloved by the universe that something would not show up for me? No, I don't believe that for a single second. So I said, never again am I going to ask my friends for money, my family for money. I'm never going to ask anybody else for any sort of favors. I'm going to figure it out on my own, because I know I am loved by this universe. I know the divine source within me would never, ever put me in a situation that I don't have the capacity to find my way out of. And so I said, all right, I know I am loved by the universe. I can't see it right now, and I'm certainly not fucking feeling it right now, but I know it to be true. I know it to be true. And so if I know it to be true, and I know the universe hears me, and I'm angry and I insist on being heard, then fucking show me now. Help me now. Get me out of this now. What do I need to do now? I know I'm loved. I know I'm supported. I know I'm seen. I know I have $14, and this is, you know, many years ago, right after my divorce. I know I've only got $14 in the bank account. My mortgage payment is due. I know it. I know I'm loved, and I know I'm talented, and I know I'm supported, and I know I'm brilliant. I'm better than this, and I'm going to stop asking people to bail me out, because what if they all disappear tomorrow?
Well, that's what did happen to me. No one wanted to help anymore, and the difference is that I'm not in California anymore. I'm in a freezing climate.
So what are you going to do?
And I don't have any real estate. All that I have is my art, and there's nobody that's interested in purchasing it.
Okay, so you have to turn this around. You have to go back inside.
And I'm 66.
So?
I'm renting a room in somebody's house. I don't have real estate. Take a second mortgage. Nothing.
So what? So what? That none of that is important. I know it's hard to hear, Christina, but none of that is important. You could be living on a park bench and you'd still have your creativity. It's the none of that is important. And I understand that you're angry, and I understand that you're frustrated, and I understand that you feel abandoned by life. I get it. But this is, I don't know if you were here for the whole call, but we talked about the stages of alchemy. We talked about the first stage is the blackening, the second stage is the whitening, the third stage is the rubedo. You are smack dab in the middle of the blackening, and you've been in it for a long time. The blackening, where shit gets broken apart, where all of these structures get shredded, where you're left with nothing but yourself. Nothing but yourself. This is where your power comes online, where you're on the verge of death's doorstep, and you say to the universe, this is not my destiny. I know it. So fucking show me what to do. I've been where you are, on death's door. I was getting ready to die. I want you to hear this. I was getting ready to die. My body was so shut down. My hair was falling out. I couldn't lift a paintbrush. I couldn't paint, even if I wanted to. My body was so depleted. And my friends were saying, you need to get to the doctor. You need to get to the emergency room. And I said, no, there's something else going on here. And I'm fucking ready to see it. And you better damn well show it to me, universe, or take me out. This is what I said to the universe. I said, either show me what to do, tell me what to do, or fucking take me out, because this is bullshit. I can't pick up a brush. I can't earn a living. I can't fill my orders for my clients. I can't walk my dog. I can't feed myself. This is bullshit. So show me what to do. And the message was, give us your rage. All of the rage and the anger that's coming out of you right now has nothing to do with me, and it has nothing to do with the circumstances. This is what's keeping you stuck. It's the rage and the anger and the self-judgment and all of that other shit. This is what needs to move. So when I said to my guides or whomever was listening, and if you've got these spiritual gifts, you have access to this as yourself, I said, fucking show me what to do or take me out, because this is bullshit. And right then I heard, give us your rage. And it shocked me. And I said, I don't know what that means, because I'm a spiritual person. I don't have anger. I'm supposed to be loving and kind and all this other stuff, and warm and fuzzy and fruity and frilly. And so I started to cry. And the voices said, no, we asked you for your rage. And so I gave them my rage. I had to find it, but yours is right on the surface. You're so fucking pissed off. It's right there.
I'm terrified I'm going to be killed. You know about my ex. You know I'm terrified of being killed. I'm afraid. I mean, we've talked about it. And then I look at the gifts, spiritual gifts. I looked at the gifts as an artist. And, you know, and I see you, and, you know, I'm using you as an example to beat myself up with, you know, through comparison and going, you know, my God, you know, I'm, you know, my spiritual, you know, level is something. And it's like, and with all of that and what I can do for others and hold for the planet, and this is where I'm still at. And after 40 odd years of work, consciously forgetting all of the work prior, I haven't been able to turn this around.
So you need to pull all of this
anger.
And
I'm really happy for you. I mean, you're this glowing example of what I could be, and I feel like such a fucking failure.
Okay, there we go. That's what we need, is this anger. So what are you going to fucking do about it, Christina? Are you?
I don't know, because everything that I do hasn't worked.
Okay, so
not for any sustained period of time.
Okay.
I don't know.
So
And just so that you know, I thought I was going to die this week. It was like, we're detoxing from heavy metals due to an injection that they had given me, which I hadn't asked for. And it's been like one organ after another. And today, now we're dealing with kidney. Lovely.
Okay.
So I, you know, I know I'm at a choice point of living or dying.
Yes. Yes. And you, and the choice point is, and here's what it's important for everybody to hear. At this stage of mystical practice, it's not my job to make you guys feel better. Right? It's never any mystical coach's job to make you feel better. It's my job now to hold Christina's feet to the fire and say, what are you made of? And yeah, you're at a choice point. Abso-frickin-lutely. You want to stay or you want to go? And given how hard you're fighting, I would say that truthfully, you want to stay. And that's this fire that is inside you, this anger that is inside you, this is what needs to move you, because this, you've been playing a victim. You know, I'm afraid of my ex. I'm, you know, the people in my life can't or won't support me anymore. That's fine. That worked for a while. It doesn't work anymore. So anger is, rage is going to be what moves you. And contrary to what we're told spiritually, is that we're told spiritually we're not allowed to have that. We're not allowed to use it. But mystically, we understand that that is a complete and total valid side of the spectrum. So you need to sit down with this rage, with this anger, get off the frickin' spiritual warm and fuzzy pot and dive deep into this rage and say, all right, what do I do? Show me what the fuck to do. Your higher self is hearing you, but this energy has been so constipated within you and so stuck. And yes, it's important to work on the love side of the spectrum and the light side of the spectrum. Abso-frickin-lutely, yes, by all means. But you're on the other side of the spectrum, and we can't move you to the light side. We need to work where you are. And so you need to be angry. You need to be rageful. You need to be angry at the people who abused you. You need to be angry at the people who molested you. You need to be angry at the people who stole from you. You need to express all of that. Get it out.
How?
Feel it. That too is what's in your kidneys. Toxins of the shit that you can't release, the poison that you can't release. It's this rage. It's this rage, the sheer and utter rage. And if you can move this rage and get it to move like a big zit, like the big head on a zit that's underneath this big pimple is all of this pus. The thing that's keeping it stuck is this rage, this pocket of rage and anger and venom. And goodness me, I show up as somebody who gets to trigger it for you. Well, boy, I've done my job and it's making you angry. I'm making you angry.
No, I'm not angry with you at all. I'm not angry at you at all. I'm frustrated that I can't, you know, do what you've done.
And what's it doing? It's making you angry.
I'm not angry at you.
No. I'm not saying you're angry at me. I'm saying what I'm doing is bringing this anger to the surface. It's amplifying it.
Last week I was screaming in the street when I'm freezing and a bus doesn't come for an hour that's supposed to be every 20 minutes. And I'm like screaming at the top of my lungs that I'm going to, you know, kill myself. I mean, please, there is so much. It has been coming out.
Good. Keep it coming. Keep it coming. It's not going to just show up in a week. I mean, fortunately for me, and what you can do is if you can sit in, find a place, go put on every sweater you've got and go outside and bundle yourself up in a place where, you know, they're not going to commit you and scream and have it out with the universe. Just say, you know, let the universe know. And you can, if you can do it in a way that you feel good about doing it in your bed where you're not going to freak out your roommate, fine. But, you know, try and go someplace where you're dressed warm and you can really do it and have ceremony with your rage. I didn't know it at the time, but I had ceremony with my rage and there were tumors in my body, and when I finished my ceremony with my rage, the tumors were gone. And it was this bizarre, weird, intense thing that changed my life. But this is your phoenix into the ashes moment. Everything that's kept you stuck is coming to a point right now. it's this anger and this rage that you want to have ceremony with. You want to bring this venom forward. It's kept you've been stuck trying to subdue all of this stuff, and it blocks your money, it blocks your health, it blocks your relationships. There's a big dragon inside you. I don't even want to call it a dragon. I want to call it, the word Leviathan comes to mind. It's this big, huge, fire-breathing, many heads monster inside of you that will save your life if you give it permission. It will save you. The angels, God bless them, they're not your allies on this part of your adventure. The Leviathan is. And you need to access it.
Is the Leviathan the rage, or I'm not sure what is the Leviathan?
The Leviathan is the rage. So, you know, we see angels that show up, and they represent love and peace and light and beauty, and that's the physical manifestation of that side of the polarity. And this Leviathan is the physical manifestation of this rage and this anger. It's moving, and it's been trapped, and it's been stuck, and it's shutting you down. This is your gift for Christmas, is meeting this. It's not a demon. It's a monster. And it is you. And it is fucking pissed off. And it is tired of being chained up. And so I want you to spend time with this rage in a constructive way, constructively, not unconsciously. And you sit with this thing, or you walk with this thing. If you want to get toxins starting to move out of your body, don't worry about fucking Italian water. Go move, get a little cheap thing of glass of water and boil it and squeeze a lemon in it, and go walk around cold Toronto or wherever you are. And if people think you're insane, fine, just do it on the inside. Be like, I fucking hate you. This is bullshit. But do it consciously. Know what you're doing. Spend time. And I'm sorry if this is freaking everybody else out on the call, but this is really important. Spend time with that thing consciously. And what do you want from me? You want to destroy me? No, it doesn't want to destroy you, because if it were to destroy you, it would destroy itself. It wants you to live, but you have to face it. You have to look at it. This is the complete other side of the spectrum. That isn't it interesting how it's another Christine, who's a member of our Mystics membership, who wants to bring in more play. That's her side of the spectrum, that we're needing to bring in more play. For you, we're needing to look at the Leviathan. We're needing to look at this big, deep. The Leviathan is a creature that lives underwater. It's hidden by the dark. And listen, I'm not taking any, and even though you say you're not angry at me, I'm not taking any of this personally. It has nothing to do with me. It's triggered. Whatever it is that I'm doing is bringing up your, all of this stuff, and so it is good. So you have to, I encourage you.
It brought up compare, you know, I started to compare, and it brought up self-rage and me falling short of the mark. I mean, even the galaxies. I started painting galaxies when I won the spiritual study trip to China in 2000, mm-hmm. You know? And, mm-hmm. You know, fine, great, a couple of souls, but I certainly haven't done what you have with it. I mean, my God, look what you've begun.
And you can do that too. You can do that too. We need to get this out of the way. I want you to understand that it was only when I got in touch with my rage that my life started to turn around. It wasn't when I got in touch with my light, because my light had always been there. My light was always fine, right? Tender, loving, caring, could empathetic with everybody, could touch critters and heal them and all that other stuff. I had no problem with my light. I had problem with my dark. And it was only when I brought.
Maybe we're similar in that way too.
It's only when I got in touch with the dark that my life turned around, where I said, it's okay for me to be angry. It's okay for me to be pissed off at the uncle who raped me when I was 6 years old. It's okay for me to be angry at my dad who died when I was 7. It's okay for me to be angry at my mother who tried to smother me with a pillow when I was 2 years old. It's okay for me to have all of those feelings, because I'm human. And it was only when I allowed myself to feel that and to let all of that energy move and show itself to me that my life turned around, that my body healed, that my career shifted, that I forgave myself. And I didn't even really know what I was trying to forgive myself for, but that I let myself off the hook. you know, because we're told as spiritual people, it's not okay for you to be angry at somebody. You've got to love everybody unconditionally. I'm like, fucking bullshit. My uncle raped me when I was 6 years old. He pinned me down and covered my face and covered my mouth and said, don't you tell or your mom and dad will die. And then my dad died. Oh, my God. Holy fuck. So I got in touch with that big time. And when I got in touch with that, everything started to shift. Everything started to change. The stuff that was blocking my spiritual gifts, the stuff that's blocking your spiritual gifts, this is what it is. You have all of this spiritual talent, but it's blocked by this darkness that we want to embrace. We don't want to fear it. We don't want to run away from it. We say, this is who a part of who I am. And I'm going to use every fucking bad language that I've got and that I know, and I'm going to turn totally anti-spiritual, totally badass. I'm going to put on my black leather studded outfit and I'm going to whip out all of my Harley tattoos, and I'm going to frickin' look at this hardcore, because this is my salvation. It's not the light. Not for you, not at this stage. Mm-mm.
And what about the fear? See, that I think is, I mean,
if you can face this Leviathan, if you can face this rage, you won't be afraid of anything ever again.
Now, the thing is, too, you know, over the last few weeks, there has been a memory of my dad cornering me in my room when I was like 4 or 6 years old. Mm-hmm. So to what extent I was sexually molested, I don't have a clear memory. You know, it's been surfacing bit by bit by bit by bit. But, yeah. He really did stuff.
Yeah. And it's not important for you to revisit that, but you know that the energy is there. You don't have to relive it unless it shows itself to you. If you're ready to re-see it, if you're ready to know and understand, then it'll be shown to you. If you're not, it won't. But, and so the fear is, okay, you go, I recognize this is just a pattern. It's like an you know, we're of the same age where we would play records, where a record gets, it would get a scratch in it and it would get stuck, right? It would skip, boop, boop, boop. And so you go, oh, well, this is just a skip in the record. It's just a skip in the record. It's just a skip in the record. What do I do to stop the skip? I notice that the skip is there. I watch it. I witness it. I observe it. It's not even real. It's just a memory. It's a memory. And that memory from your past, here's what it is, Christina. All of this past rage from the past, the PTSD and all this other stuff, is shaping your future. And until you face this rage and this anger and really get into the nitty-gritty juiciness of it and face the fear of it, it's going to continue to shape your future. And all of the work we've been doing up until this point has brought you to the moment where stillness and all the work you've been doing has raised the Leviathan. It's brought it to the surface, which is what you want in an initiation process. It needs to be brought up. So congratulations, gold star.
I've been listening to your thing about, you know, bringing up the dark stuff. So, you know.
We have to. For some people, it's buried really, really deep because it's hard. And for other people, it, you know, they don't have as much of that sort of restriction, so it's easier for them to process. But when it's big like this, it requires a lot of courage. So you have to look at it and express all of this rage and this anger. You know, there'll be times where I'll be out walking, and I think I've told you guys this story before, where I'll be out walking, Lily, and I'll be having a really kind of great day. And then suddenly this wave will come over me that's really angry, and it'd be like, I fucking hate you. And I'll feel it. Who knows what triggered it? I don't know. The way that a branch crunched under my feet, I don't know what triggered it, but there it is. And I feel it, and I witness it, and I'm like, huh, this is a memory replaying, and I'll just watch it. And if it needs to say something, I'll just watch it, and I'll witness it, and I go, this isn't me. This isn't my divine self. It's just some memory playing itself out. And I get to decide whether or not I'm going to let it carry me and shape the rest of my day to shape my future, or if I'm going to witness it and deal with it right now, so that it dissipates, it has its little hissy fit, it evaporates, and then I come back in charge. So that's what this is for you. And I understand that there are, you know, financial issues, and there are, you know, there are resources around you. If you, you know, if you need to go if you need to go and get a new coat from someplace, then there are places around that will help you with a new coat. You know, but that's the superficial stuff. This, if you can spend some hardcore time with this rage within you, it can, as it did with me, it can turn around overnight. It can. It did. My tumors disappeared overnight. They were there in my breast the night before. I woke up after this experience, and they were gone.
What did you do in doing that? What was your work? Because, you know, I can think freeform writing. I can scream into a pillow. There aren't a lot of places, and, you know, here to go screaming in the middle of the street and not get arrested or put into a hospital. I know freeform writing, and she doesn't want me burning things here if I write. I mean, you know, what do I do? So, what was your method that got it out so fast?
Well, my method was I screamed into a pillow for 20 minutes, and then passed out. It was, you know, it was a hardcore revisitation of the trauma, and then it passed out, and then it was gone. But you can use freeform writing. You can go outside and take the stuff that you write and go find a place outside. And I know it's hard if you're in the city, but find an ashtray. I think they still allow you to smoke in Toronto. Find an ashtray and tear up your stuff and just in your own little intimate personal ceremony. It doesn't have to be sacrosanct or fancy. You just burn it in an ashtray.
When I freeform, it's pages and pages and pages. This is way beyond an ashtray. This is like in a pot. And I have been freeforming this week.
Okay. So listen, I want to break you of a habit. Because what you're doing right now, and I understand why I get it 1,000%. I don't want you to think for a second that I don't have any compassion for where you are, because I've been where you are. But you're arguing for your limitations. Okay, fine. You write freeform. All right. So write freeform, a big, huge stack. Great. Tear it up into a bunch of little pieces so you've got a bag of paper, and go outside and gradually over time burn it in one ashtray, and then make it a ceremony and walk another block and find somewhere else in town where you can burn it. This is, so when we do pilgrimage, right now what's happening is you're being asked to, you've ever heard of the, the Camino, when people walk the Camino, the El Camino in Spain, it's a pilgrimage where they suffer. They suffer on the journey. They suffer on the walk. Just like Christ in his passion, when he became divine, he suffered on the walk. He had to walk. He had to have experience. It was his expression of putting that stuff into motion that made him worthy of his divinity. And you're arguing for your limitations. You're saying, I can't do it because of this. I can't do it because of this. I can't do it because of that. And I'm saying, okay, stop doing that. If it's going to be hard, then fucking let it be hard. All right, if you write 100 pages and you can only burn 10 pages a day and you need to do it for the next 10 days, fine. Whatever you can do, this is your initiation, Christina. It's not going to be easy. And you're being put on a pilgrim's path. And just like walking the Camino, now it's gotten easier and easier over time, but when the first pilgrims started to walk the Camino, there were no hotels around. They had to fucking figure it out on their way and make it work. And this is where you are. If you want this the way I know you do, then you have to say, all right, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. I'm willing, universe, hear me. Hear me. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And if it's going to be uncomfortable and cold and I've got roots and gray hair, I don't fucking care. I will do whatever it takes. And in that, you break open and you'll be out there walking. You'll be fucking cold and you'll be like, this is fucking bullshit. And all of that energy will move. All right. But this is, again, breaking the idea that spiritual evolution is always going to be full of warm, fuzzy bunnies and cloudy, cotton candy, angel fairy dust. It's just not. That's where you are right now. And where your commitment says, I will do whatever it takes. God, universe, whoever is fucking listening to me right now, I will do whatever it takes. And if that means I have to eat soup broth for the next 30 days, I'll do it. I will do it because I'm not going to argue with where I am now. You're arguing with where you are. You're saying, no, 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 I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it. Well, listen, sweet pea, this is where you are. This is where you are. Choice point. It was the same thing when I got sick. I said, I don't want to be here, but if I am here, fine. Fine. Take me then. If that's what you want, but I want to stay. So fucking show me what to do and I'll do whatever it takes. I said, even if you smite me dead, I don't care. Show me what to do. And it was only because our energy, if we've been abused, has been so suppressed, so oppressed, so shut down, that it's only when we step forward in this power to say, show me, God damn it, that that's who we really are, is this position of power. So if it means that you write all of your stuff down and you've got 100 pages and you're like, all right, how do I do this so that I have, that I can ceremonially use where I'm at right now and still do what I want to do and need to do. All right, fine. Fine. If I have to eat ikebon noodles, ramen noodles, then I'll eat it. Fine. This is where I'm at right now. I will accept where I'm at right now. I'll do it. My kidneys hurt. Fine. I'll do it. This is your pilgrimage. This is your burning. This is your phoenix being brought to ash. And I can't fix that for you. If somebody was to show up tomorrow and say, here's $1,000, you would be exactly where you are after that money went away. That money would go away and you'd still be where you are. So right now you say, okay, I have no money. I have no money. This is where I'm at. The only resources I have are me and my relationship with God. That's it. Bring it. So again, looking at the analogy of you and comparison to the Passion of the Christ where he fell down, Simon showed up and picked up the cross for him. And he fell down again and somebody else came up and picked up the cross for him. For a while, he had support. And then when it got to the end, there was no more support. He had to do it on his own. At the end, he was on his own. At the beginning, there were people to help. That got him where he needed to be on the stage, but then when it came for it to end, he was on his own. That's where you are, kid. That's where you are. And so now it's your relationship with Source Energy and God that is going to get you through this. And the only way you can do it, just like Jesus on the cross, Father, why hast thou forsaken me? Come on, essentially is what he's saying. Come on. Bring it forward so I understand what to do, because they're killing me. It's over. The personality of Jesus was being destroyed. Bring it. Show me what to do. And God showed him what to do. But it wasn't until that cry of, help me, I am your son. That's where you are. That's where you are.
Wow.
And when you get through that, then the rebirth that comes, that emerges, the phoenix that comes out of that fire will be then what supports you as you move forward. It won't be the people who have given you money or the people who have, you know, offered you care or support. It's going to be you and your relationship with God. Everything that is false has been stripped from you.
That's absolutely true, including what I look like. I mean, it's in my clothes. Any means I have to identify myself, it's like, wow.
Yay. Yay. That's why people walk the pilgrimage. That's why people walk the Camino. That's why people they force themselves to leave everything behind and go discover God. Well, you're doing that right now where you are. And that's what I had to do. Stripped from everything. Stripped from family, stripped from relationships, stripped from careers, stripped from friends, stripped from how I made money, stripped from my beloved pet.
All of it. Everything you just said. Absolutely all of it.
All gone. Yep. Congratulations.
I have a roof over my head. Thank you, God.
So you have a roof over your head. Great. You're not living in the street. Awesome. There are resources around you with social services that can help you if you should need them. But I don't think that's what this is about. This is about going into that deeper place of complete and total self-sacrifice to get to the other side. And if you as a child were gifted with spiritual gifts, then this is going to be what amplifies them for you. What really puts you in that place of power where you don't have to, you know, join an online school to discover it. You've already got it. It's stuck behind this Leviathan. That's the only word that keeps coming to mind. I have to Google it, dictionary word, Leviathan. I'm going to do that right now because...
I didn't even know what it was.
Leviathan is a sea monster referenced in the Hebrew Bible in the book of Job, Psalms, and Isaiah. It is a sea monster defeated by, you're going to love this. It is a sea monster defeated by Yahweh in various scriptural accounts. Something large or formidable, right? But in your equation, it is the thing that's keeping you from your divine light. And the only way you're going to be able to look at it, the only way you'll be get to the other side of it is to go through it. And then ultimately, then your Leviathan will become your sacred guide. It won't become something that you fear. And then once you've got that Leviathan on your side and in your consciousness, you will never fear anything again. Those patterns will be broken. And so I would encourage you to take this time around Christmas to spend time with your Leviathan, with your monster, with this rage. Whereas everybody else is spending time in the light and the happiness, you're like, oh, man, what are you doing, Christina, for Christmas? Oh, I'm spending time with the Leviathan. People are like, what? She's lost her mind. She's gone batshit crazy. Like, no.
I'd like to actually beat it before then or overcome it before then.
Well, you'll meet it. You need to meet it first. Willingly meet it, not from an unconscious, scared place where you're trying to talk yourself out of it and pretending that it's not there, but like the spiritual warrior standing face to face with your sword in one hand, and you're looking at it, and you're saying, you are me. There's nothing keeping me from my light except you, and you're me, so I'm not going to destroy you, because if I destroy you, I destroy me. And you're not going to destroy me, because if you destroy me, you destroy you. So we're in this together, you motherfucker. So bring it. What are you angry, Rachel?
So if I can't destroy it, because then I'd be destroying myself.
You don't want to destroy it. You want to transmute it. You want to transmute it. Right now, it's a part of you that is standing in your way. You want to transmute it so that the energy is always going to be there, but we're changing it from something that blocks you into something that propels you forward. So I still have my rage. My rage is still there, but it is in the light. It's been brought into the light. You know, I don't have a relationship with my uncle or the people who abused me. I'm not going to, kind of like what Bianca was saying, I'm not going to go puke love all over those people. They don't deserve it. It's, you know, mm-hmm. I understand why they did it. You know, wounded people will wound people. So I understand they're wounded, but I don't, you know, there's no love lost there. So I still have my rage. And when it pops up, I spend time with it. I'm like, hey, and It, you know, if I get angry and I need to move something or something needs to get done, I spend time with it. You're not trying to destroy it. We're transmuting it. We're turning it from something that blocks you and limits you and is destroying your body, not because it wants to kill you, but because it's limiting energy. It's blocking energy, your life force. It's essentially sitting on your hose. Your Leviathan is sitting on your hose that links you to source energy, and that's causing your body to malfunction. It's in and of itself isn't destroying you. its ability to limit the flow of energy is what's causing you problems. And so you don't want to destroy it. You want to get it to the point where you love it. I love my rage. I love my dark angel. It showed up for me as a monster with dark black blue skin and big black wings and long fangs and long teeth. And at first it scared me. I'm like, I don't want to look at you. He said, you better look at me because I am you. And if you don't, then this is going to be a struggle for the rest of our life. And now now I love it. I can look at him and be like, man, you are one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. He's become my black, black angel. Right? But he's still there. He's not working against me, because the only time those energies work against us is when they're suppressed, oppressed, repressed, not brought into the light.